Hi, I'm Josh, and let's see. Spider crotch, creepiest thing you'd have to watch. It's got fangs, nice and slick. It just cut off that dude's dick. Look out! Here comes a spider crotch.
Wow.
Okay.
Psst, you're Matt.
Right. Hi, guys. I'm Matt, and wait, you did Theater Bazaar. That means that can either do Creepshow or Tales of Halloween. I'm going to be like Leslie Nielsen and be oddly serious this whole time while you expect me to make jokes.
So the difference will be you'll be intentionally not making any jokes.
I'll be intentionally unfunny.
Excellent.
Instead of just unfunny.
let's see. So this is Charlie Dunn Austin. I don't remember who it was from up there. This is Charlie Dunn Austin. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. I was out hanging out with Barry Boswick the other night, and just sort of like, it seemed like everything was going pretty well, and then all of a sudden I was sort of like, the Charlie Doppelganger, and it was like, oh no, and then I was like, ah, and it ended. And I had to go to work, and it was really confusing. So that was what happened.
Totally. Here's hoping that on actual Halloween, Charlie, you will listen to your better angels. And this is Horror Show Hot Dog. So this week we have it's an anthology week. We have lots of short films that are, some of them are tied into like an overarching narrative, some aren't at all. And one that is standing alone this week is Pictured, our first short. Or
the cheese of this podcast.
Yes. I feel like I am the cheese of this podcast.
You are the cheese of the podcast.
Pictured would be en el foto for Spanish, because you know it's like
in el foto.
Yeah, in el foto. We're in the picture. What we're gonna say?
That totally sounds like somebody visiting Mexico. Like, where está the fudo peso?
Exactly. El tuo beerzo, pleaseo. Like, that is just like, talk white. Like, it just reeks of that kind of like imperialism. But all right, and if you say so. I've never fact checked your translations. That's the thing. But for all I know, you've never learned a lick of Spanish, because I could never call you on it because I don't know a lick of Spanish.
The greatest trick that Josh ever pulled was convincing people that he could speak Spanish.
Oh, the Josh, I will tell you though that the couple women that work at my day job work. That are Hispanic, the term enfuegador they think is so great.
Oh yeah,
I use for lighters enfuegador or enfuegador say, and like they think that's so great.
We asked somebody in our cab driver in Vegas spoke Spanish, and we asked him how to say lighter, like mm-hmm. cigarette lighter, and he was like, you know, you just say el fuego, the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's no fun.
Sure.
So we decided it should be el enfuegador, which is the on-fire-er.
The women of my work, they think it's so great. They're just
because it's something somebody who speaks Spanish can understand. And then they go like, what the fuck? And you're like, yeah, I know.
Oh, that's funny.
I make Spanish better.
So
so short pictured by the team that brought us Lights Out,
mm-hmm.
which nobody should be held to that standard, really.
Oh, God, no.
But,
no.
This is almost a similar formula. Yeah.
I would say it does a good job. And once again, this is the kind of thing where, like, they sat around until they thought of an idea they could shoot in their apartment.
Yeah.
And like I said, there are five or six shorts that they have on their channel. I think all of which are shot in that apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all slightly different conceptually, but, and they work to varying degrees. But, that's just impressive that you can go, we literally have nothing. Let's see what we can do. Well, we can tip over this vase.
Yeah.
Like, okay. We can make some photos.
Yeah, we can print out like 10 different versions of this picture.
So in this short, and here's a bit of why I picked it. In the short, you have, you know, same one from Lights Out, in her apartment. Here's a ruckus. Could I describe the ruckus? No, I can't.
Okay.
But thank you. I tried to head you off with the past there. 2 weeks. But she hears some kind of noise, goes to investigate, and eventually gets clued in on the idea that something goofy is going on with the picture on the wall, because she hears noises, and when she looks at the picture, the subject of said photo moves. and eventually does the thing that I thought was really fun of just holding her hands in front of her eyes, which I'm now pantomiming because audio podcast.
Yep.
And every time she like covers her eyes and looks again, the figure is moved. And it gives you that feeling of screaming internally of going, stop doing that!
Right?
Just burn the photo!
By the time you get to the, like, the girl in the picture pointing at you with
doing
her,
the
like,
Donald Sutherland
back,
going, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't want to see
why
what
would you do
next.
One more? Yeah. Yeah. But here's the thing is, like, that is, it's a clever, simple concept that can be executed literally in an apartment building, which I think is really impressive. But also, I did not see that ending coming. The fact that what we end up with is a really good swap of just the hand coming up and then revealing a different person.
Yeah.
And having her be trapped in the photo, which I thought was, okay, like, didn't see that coming. Not the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Right.
But, all right, I would have expected, you know, hand comes down, it's in the room. And it would be too much like the ending of Lights
Out.
Yeah,
like behind her.
You know, or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, so the fact that there was a turn that I didn't see coming impressed me. And it's like, okay, like, you know, again, for being a 3-minute short, all right, you got my attention again.
The only problem with it is that the scary face is not as polished.
Like, oh, not at all. It was all practical.
I mean, really, because to me, it really looked like three different sections matted in to her face.
Think?
Yeah, I thought it looked like the same process where they did how they did the Lights Out face.
But see, none of that seemed physically improbable.
Right.
It just looked like someone with cracked, you know, pancake makeup on.
It was definitely a different set of eyes, different nose.
Oh.
And I think they just matted it in and didn't quite have the same amount of polish yet.
And I don't know if this one was pre or post.
Yeah, so that was the only thing that hurt it for me. I thought the premise was pretty neat.
What do you think, Charlie?
The execution, yeah.
Well, it has that kind of the baby's room switcheroo thing. The thing that was bothersome to me is kind of what you talk about in terms of the effects at the end, where, like, yeah, there is that thing of, like, once the picture starts changing, every time you move your hand in front of your eyes, like, I'm going to take the picture off the wall and then open the and go out onto the balcony and then just fling this thing as far away from my house as I can get it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a sales deal. It is bullshit. But besides that, like, that final hand down, which, again, that's a good transitionary to keep showing the picture changing, that last one down, and it's like, and you see in the picture, you see our girl in there, mm-hmm. you know, stuck in the house now, and then that's your ending. So here's the thing. Like, if it's our girl in the picture at the end, stuck in there, and you got ghosty, feisty lady is now out and all grinning or whatever else. So if our girl is now trapped in the picture, is it that the spirit thing has inhabited her body and then her spirit is now stuck in there? Or they just did a complete one-for-one swap or what? Because the reason I bring this up is that the thing with the face, when she goes whoop, and then it's still our girl, but now she's got makeup on with the eyes all weird or whatever else, with the kind of the grin. I was like, I really wanted it to not be her any longer. I wanted it to be the girl, the lady in the picture.
Wasn't it?
Mm.
I
guess I thought it was.
I would go for the possession angle. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I was gonna say it had to be because
the
girl in the picture
changes things a lot. If that's the case, and now maybe I'm just bad at watching things, which I think we've come across that in the past.
Right.
I want to walk on eggshells a little bit here because, like, the girl, the young lady who's the lead in this, is a little more round faced, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the girl in the picture has got a much more drawn, like, thinner face. And so when they did that final reveal, and our girl has now got makeup on, got the white contacts and the grin or whatever else, it's like, I don't think it had the impact that it could have had, because if they were trying to make her look like the girl in the picture, she doesn't have the same face genetically speaking.
And I guess it's a pussy way of saying that. No. It's fine to say that these two people don't look alike.
Right.
You know, like, if it was two guys, we'd have no problem saying it.
Yeah.
That one of these people is larger than the other. That's not a bad thing. That doesn't make us douchebags. That is an observable reality. But I guess I bought into the idea in my head that what had happened is they had done a one-for-one swap.
Oh.
And so I guess I watched this differently because I watched it again right before you got here, Josh, because when I remember, I like to watch the short one more time right before we record, because I usually have already watched it, so it's been a while, you know, when we come back to talking about it since I last saw it. And I watched it again, and was like, it's still not, I mean, it's not Lights Out, but again, what is?
Right.
And, but it was, it's still, I thought it was, like, it held up and it was cool. But yeah, that's twice now, maybe three times I've watched this. And to me, it was hand comes down, and they've done a full swap. I thought that was the lesson there. And like the fact that the being we see now in the apartment is got the oatmeal face and whatever was just like, okay, like that's just, it's been a grainy photograph. Mm-hmm. Here's this thing up close. It would make more sense, maybe, that it's some kind of possession thing and it's a spirit thing. If you can say anything that I just said and also try to say it makes sense.
Right.
But
yeah, I just figured like...
But I don't know. I guess I just assumed it's a one-for-one swap. And so the fact that it didn't occur to me that, oh, that's the same woman and different, maybe that made me like it more because I just thought, okay, cool, now this thing's loose.
Right.
Although that also, I mean, the thing is the wrong way of using the phrase begging the question, but it does beg the question, where the fuck did she get that photo and why did she have it?
This is my creepy half-sister from Transylvania.
Right? Or here's the, was it a landscape photo that she, like, I like this picture of this, two-story walk-up.
And a creepy girl.
And all of a sudden, hey, was there always a person in this photo? Just like, that's fucking
it was like
weird.
In the rack at IKEA or Goodwill or something.
But I think, to this film's credit, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was just interested in watching. And again, the our lead, who's the same lead from Lights Out, I dig her. I think she's
great.
Even with no lines, she emotes and has charisma. Like, mm-hmm. She's really good. Like, I like watching her.
It is interesting to think that both of those shorts have no dialogue.
Yeah, you're right.
And that is super neat.
In fact, I think of, I watched some of the other ones they did, and I don't know that those had dialogue either. Mm. I think there's texting in one of them, but I don't think there's dialogue. So
this one, I still think watch it. It's no Lights Out, but it's good.
Yeah, I definitely say watch it, for sure.
All right. Let's go into, we're going to start with Tales from Halloween.
Yeah.
Tales of Halloween, Tales from Halloween.
Tales of Halloween.
Tales near Halloween.
Of and above or around.
Yeah.
/ just Halloween.
I was going to say, going into this, like, outside of a few little things here and there as far as cast goes, this thing is just so, at some point, you can't really. I mean, you just can't. There's so many people in this that are people of note. That just, I mean, I stopped making notes to myself to remember to, like, oh, Rebecca's the with her daughter doing trick or treating. Like, oh, they're great. And oh, here's this person. Or here's that person. There's that guy from Almost Human. And then at some point, it's like, nah, I can't do that any longer.
Cause you lost your ability to even.
Yeah,
exactly.
You are so odd that you can't even.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's this is stuffed. This is stuffed.
No, it is. This movie is chock-a-block with horror references and amazing cameos, and not even the usual thing where, oh, well, Tom Savini's in it, or oh, they used Kane Hodder to play the thing.
Right.
It's more recent people that are becoming. Mm-hmm. Those people that it's really satisfying in that regard. Not that the whole movie's great or that all the bits are good, but the first segment, the kids eating a carpenter bar,
right?
Yeah,
I was so horror boner. I was like, this is great.
Right, so that is one particular example though that hit me the other way.
Really?
Because it's not clever.
Oh, but so what? It's just the most masturbatory thing ever. It's like,
yeah.
Hey, you know what? Thank you, people out here that know what this reference is, for always giving us your money because otherwise we couldn't do this shit. And I get that. It's a tip of the hat, is what it is.
Well, but for it to be a carpenter bar, like, people are talking about how great that is, and I was just like, that's not, like, John Carpenter doesn't have anything to do with candy bars, and they, like, candy bars don't play.
So had it been like a
films or
Todd bar
or anything, like. Grab something from one of his movies and put that reference. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you had a Tony bar or a Todd bar,
make
or
it a little like a Mr. McCready or something, you know, instead of Mr. Good bar, you know.
Or I would prefer, personally, I would love, like, it would have, you'd have to really, this is a special level of brain that would have to do this, but in the, like a package of Mike and Ike's, but instead of Mike and Ike, it's like Ugg and Lee.
Yeah. That would have been dope as fuck. Yes. Okay.
See, that was the thing, like, this is I enjoyed this quite a bit, but a lot of the stuff that's going to bring people glee for me was just kind of like, eh. Because it's like it's an apathetic hand job when it could have been,
courtesy spit.
Yeah, you could have been used a little more lube and varied the grip up a little bit.
Sure.
Done the full-on G.I. Joe Kung Fu grip kind of deal. Where, so a lot of it's like that surface fan service. Sure. Like, no, go deeper. Don't just make it Clover Corp. Make it the fucking Shamrock Corporation from Halloween
Which,
3.
Which,
like,
I mean, see, but there's got to be rights issues with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's...
There
that's,
has to be.
So call up Carpenter.
I mean, the fact that the segment Friday the 31st, he's not Jason. He's as close as you can get while being legally distinct. But he's not Jason. Anyway, we should... some kind of preface on this. So, yeah, this is obviously an anthology.
Yep.
How much did you guys love the credit sequence, or is it just me?
Hated it.
I liked it.
One of the weakest part of the movie.
Are you shitting me? I loved it. All the pop-up segments. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I think we just have to not be friends ever.
Probably. Oh, by the way, Cuentos del Día de los Muertos.
Oh, there you go.
But,
what did you not like about it, Josh?
When those credits started, it was like, well, for one, the lettering looks really, like... done on my laptop kind of deal. Like it didn't have any polish at all with the way that the lettering was integrated into it. It's like, oh, holy shit, this is looking like the guy down the block who has the heavy metal band and he whips up a band logo in paint.
So if it had more dials and knobs, you'd have preferred those knobs to be polished.
Exactly. I would have gobbled up some polished knobs.
I'm in a silly mood now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I really liked what they were going for with the pop-ups and everything.
I really thought that
But
was
I
cool.
thought it was just ugly as fuck. Like, really, really shittily executed cool idea.
Charlie, do me a favor. Tell Josh why he's wrong.
Well,
it hits you one way, it hits you the other. Like, I thought it was ugly as fuck. Both of you were like, how great were those credits? Like, none great. Moving on.
Well, yeah, but he's not in the room with you, so you can't smack him, so I'd like him to say it.
Right.
And I can just nod astutely.
Well, the only thing I would say with that is that, I think, Josh, I agree that, as far as, it is, as far as being a really cool idea. But in terms of the execution, though, too, it's sort of like, at some point, these guys, I mean, one of the guys who produced it, and I don't call my own butt in terms of, referencing folks or knowing people outside of the purview or whatever, but a couple of people that produce this movie, whatever, they're a couple of them show up in the movie and this, that, whatever, but they're kind of pulling it in from all angles. There's a lot of favors in this thing, and so I just kind of look at the credits as it's a really good idea, and God bless you, because that's charming, because I've seen 10,000 too many shorts and mid-lengths and features where it's like typey, typey, typey on a black screen. Typey, typey, typey. And it's kind of that sort of credit stuff. And so when they go for that kind of diorama style, I was like, yeah, cool. Diorama style. So, I mean, I take it a step further and just say, yes, great, cool, lovely. And then just go go on, sport. That part of it really screams charm and boxy, and let's put on a show in the barn. Not that kind of show, but a different kind of...
on the bear stage?
Yes.
In the barn? Yeah, that was... I was talking with our buddy Dan Peltzman, who's in with the Twin Cities Horror Fest and stuff.
Sure.
He was like, I'm so excited to see Tales of Halloween. What did you think? And I was like, don't stop watching it at the credits, because you're going to want to.
See, I would think that, to me, immediately pulled me
because
in.
As soon as they started, it's just like, oh, this is one of those, 5-cent bargain bin. Man, those are, oof, okay.
Weird.
Yeah, I could see somebody turning that on and going, oh, I thought this was an actual legit thing, and this does not, this looks like what I made in junior high. And it's not the diorama stuff, it's the way that the words are matted in.
Interesting.
Looks like shit.
Well, that's a good distinction, though, Josh, because that's...
Yeah.
No, that's I'm very glad that you said that or reiterated that, because that's... They are two totally different things. And I have seen where just font stuff and spacing and whatever, buddy Brian Collins, Horror Movies Day and Birth Movies Death and everything. Collins does credits for tons of stuff. And it's one of those things where... It's you don't really notice it too much. Like, no offense to him, you don't really notice it too much until they're not done so good.
Yeah,
no, the idea that there is an Academy Award for editing,
mm-hmm.
and you go, what the fuck? Like, how can you tell what's done well? Yeah. Until you watch a movie where it sucks and you go, right.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it's just that a lot of people work really hard to make editing not suck in movies. And I forget what it was that we watched. Was it last week? One of the movies we watched, I meant to mention it last week and I know I forgot to. It was Food of the Gods. The editing was so bad, I noticed it was bad.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's that 2001 Maniacs also, where just like, the scene is clearly over.
Yep. And it was like, what the fuck? You know? And it's, and again, and like, and we talk, I bring this up a lot, where Charlie is always on point about movie soundtracks, especially the really good ones. And I only notice if they're horrendously bad or like sublimely good. And, you know, like, so it's, the editing is one of those things where even less often than I recognize the music in a movie do I recognize the editing, but like, so, like, anyway.
Getting into, how cool is it that Adrien Barbeau is basically the DJ from The Fog?
That made me soups happy.
That I thought was super neat. And because that one's not underlined with a highlighter the way that some of these are.
No, not at all.
She's just kind of in there occasionally giving atmosphere.
Yeah. This one does technically tie things together a little, here and there to varying degrees. Some of them
you have a couple of characters crossover
that you'll see pop up, and you have references sometimes to things in other ones, especially the final bit.
There's a lot of them actually. There's a lot of people that kind of you see them in the background.
Yeah, it's not like Trick or Treat where it is very blatant and obvious, and they tie together so tightly that you spend a lot of time pulling your hair out trying to figure out the timeline of the movie.
Yeah.
This is why I don't go to parties. But
they're
loosely tied. Short films, it's not just like, you know, like the other two that we watched are just things that happen.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, we should try to get into these because these always take forever to talk about.
Okay, well, we can try and be like...
Yeah, we'll do what we can.
The first segment, Sweet Tooth, we got... kid with the shitty older sister and shitty boyfriend.
Shitty babysitter.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Shitty babysitter boyfriend telling him that... if he eats all of his candy on Halloween night, then the kid who murdered his parents and ate the candy out of their stomachs will come for him.
Fucking awesome.
Which is great.
I love that.
Urban legend.
So hard. Yeah. And so, yeah, that is the whole premise. That's all it takes.
Yep.
And the kid is freaked out, goes to bed going, your boyfriend's a douchebag.
Yeah.
But then still leaves his carpenter bar.
Yeah.
Sitting on the floor. And sure enough, you know, said creature shows up, slaughters... girlfriend and boyfriend because they ate all the candy and are like sugar high drunk.
Yes, like can't even move.
And just like, I'm gonna get some Pepto. And then, you know, he shows up and literally rips their guts out so that he can eat that. The gag stuffing the arm into the boy's mouth looks great. That was really impressive. I was surprised they went that way, and it looks really, really good.
Your monster design is neat.
Yeah, monster design looks good. And then, you know, the kid is spared because he left a candy bar as tribute. Right. And then the fact that when mom and dad come home and are also gross, and it's the dude from Big Ass Spider.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh because I actually really like that guy. I think he's charming as shit.
Spider, I now hate him.
Yeah, no, but I want that guy to be in a really good movie.
Yeah.
You know? Because I like that guy. Like, there's no reason he couldn't be Kevin James, except talented.
Right.
But mom and dad come home, and there's little boy, and the ambiguity of him going, they ate all my candy. And if they're looking at these two slaughtered people, and this kid essentially giving them M.O.
Right.
And it's like, what the fuck? And the fact that that gets referenced later.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, good callback. Like, I don't know. I loved the first segment. I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, it's good. It does a good job of setting the tone. Like, we're in for 80s-level gore and practical effects. And, like, this
and
is
fun.
Not... Yeah, this
really
is not your,
fun.
Like, gentle, with the more Amblin Entertainment kind of deal. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a little down and dirtier, if still fun. What did you think of this one, Charles?
I thought it was okay. I think the guts are great. The eyes look terrible. If I'm going to be just real, as far as all these segments, just to get through them real fast, like
sure,
some things are great, some things are not so good. The guts look fine. They did a good job there. Creature was good, but the eyes, I was like, oh, so JV, like. Like, that just looked really lousy, and it's like, and it wasn't necessary. They didn't be like, well, he rips open the guts, he's like, candy, and also, Homeboy has a thing for eyes. Like,
yeah.
Hmm. okay. I don't know why they decided, we'll make them more look more fucked up. Like, nah, not necessary. So besides that, I thought it was cool. Yeah, and the shot where they come in, the kid's standing there. It's like, okay. That was nice. So that was cool. Right. So yeah, I mean, I'd say push.
All right. Second one's the night Billy raised hell with a, like, unrecognizable Barry Bostwick as our demon guy. I had to go back and check IMDb after that because he looks like the guy who played Pruneface and Dick Tracy.
I thought it was Angus Scrimm at first.
Huh, yeah.
Which would have been really interesting.
Right.
But then once it, because when he first just opens the door, I was like, you know, it wouldn't take a lot of makeup. But once he starts, you know, talking and gesticulating, I'm like, okay, that's all right. But yeah. So this one is older sister and sister's friend convince young child that you should egg the douchebag's house because it's a tradition for Halloween. Douchebag grabs child and tells him, I'll show you what's up and we'll go pranking, and takes small child out in his little devil costume to fuck up the entire city, basically.
Yeah, like amusing pranks like stabbing people.
Yeah, exactly. It goes from being a douche to being hardcore illegal to being improbably illegal.
Right.
What's her name?
Adrienne Curry.
Adrienne Curry cameo that was wildly unnecessary.
Yeah, I was a little bit sad about that. Like, seeing her name in the credits, because I'm a huge fan of hers.
Mm.
She started on America's Next Top Model and was too smart for that shit. And ended up, like, I mean, she went and did Playboy, which endeared her to me immediately.
Sure.
And then
she dated a Brady, which, you know, yeah. I don't have that credit.
Sure. But she has become this, like, honest-to-God geek girl. Where she's heavy into gaming, into cosplay,
yeah.
And just kind of makes a living being a total nerd.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. So I was a big fan of hers, and it was weird to see that her cameo was, like, getting out of a car, and the guy goes, Adrienne Curry?
Getting an autograph from her was kind of funny, though.
Yeah, this one was pitched a little bit broader than I wanted it to
be. This was very silly, although, again, like...
But I love the reveal at the end.
The reveal is good. Which is, of course, that the little devil guy that's causing all the shit turns out was not the little kid we saw. Because the guy's like, I'm going to teach you how to do pranks. And then, you know, we get to the end of the night after, like, literally killing people, robbing convenience stores, running people down, like, a million horrible things. You get, you know, Deuter comes home with little devil kid. And when he opens the door, we see the original kid still tied to triggers. I thought you were going to teach me about pranks. She goes, oh, this is the best prank.
Yeah.
And then sends him out on the front lawn when the cops show up to arrest him in his same costume for everything that this little freakish imp did.
Oh, not to arrest him.
Well, I guess they shoot him.
Yeah,
right.
there are gunshots after we fade to black.
Which, again, anytime you kill a kid, I'm on board. But, I had to have that conversation today. That was weird.
Yeah.
But again, good turn. It is very broad and very silly. I did like the, what is it, Billy Rules the Night?
Yeah.
Spitting on a garage.
Well, that's not my favorite tagging in this movie, though. That comes later.
Okay. Well, what did you think of this segment, Charlie?
The second half of it, when everything going roughshod, and he's fucking standing on the counter, shooting the clerk, and, like, you know, stabbing the dentist and all that stuff, like, and, like, you know, looking back at Barry Bostwick, and, like, big thumbs up, like, hey! Like, that whole thing was just, like, it was demented and dark. It's, like, I understand that they made the decision that they were going to, like, make eyebrow noises, and, like, do kind of, like, you know, puts on his hat, and, like, kind of bling, and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I just think this one would have been the best one in the whole thing had it not been for the goofy. I guess the goofy kind of bothered me. That just is like go demented dark, like DeMar, you know, like the go darker.
What like, was make the this, what was the part you didn't like?
Just all the goofy and that whole thing.
I'm sorry. Once more.
I can only do it three times.
Oh, come on, man! I was going through a tunnel. I couldn't hear that last one.
When he does that three times, Goofy shows up. It's like, good showtime. This is a weird version of Beetlejuice.
She did nothing to me. Nothing. I say nothing.
I didn't say anything.
Charlie,
crazy.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So this one, I don't know. It was fun.
I would say push
again.
I mean, I want to say positive, but I would just say push because, like, goddamn cutesy noises just really bug me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that part pissed me off. The silly sound effects that would accompany the motions in this one, that bothered me. I think, honestly, if all they had done was take that out, I would have liked this segment better. And it was okay, but...
I think it's one that I needed to... I want to see that one, just that segment again, having the whole of it in my head now. Because as it was unfolding, it was just like, the fuck?
It was really tough to wrap my brain around, too, because I was like, there's no way. There's no way that this kid is just going to go along with this shit.
Well, I think it's more just like, wait, so just like, Adrian Curry? Like, huh, no. But, okay, but I think knowing that that's coming, it would be less jarring.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think it was all right. I don't have the title for the next one.
Trick.
Oh, yeah, Trick. So, the witch from Trick or Treat comes to the door of these, like, four guys having a Halloween party. Which, like, the other Halloween party in here is just people sitting in a room, just kind of going, hey, remember stuff? Yeah, stuff's cool.
And, so this is one of those film craft things that kind of bugged me a little bit. Like, I know now it's a joke with all of us who are saturated with this stuff. Like, oh, they show Night of the Living Dead, or they show The Devil Bat, or they show Carnival of Souls, or whatever. But it's like, how many motherfuckers are in this movie? And how many directors directed different segments? Could they have not gotten other movie cues?
They're all show watching Night of the Living Dead.
Well, Night of the Living Dead is free.
There's got to be like...
Plus, it is happening on the same night in the same city.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, like, yeah, like, I honestly, that was something I noticed, is that, like, at least four times, I think, people are watching Night of the Living Dead, and I kind of went, well...
Yeah.
They forgot to put that thing on the beginning so that they never owned the rights to it, and it was public domain immediately, so... If I were to make a movie and had to have a TV on, that's what my people would be watching too, because afford. No,
but I mean, like,
nothing.
That's what I'm saying. Like, in this one, you have all these directors that are involved in this thing, from Neil Marshall and Bousman, and all the rest of these guys are involved in this thing. Like, I just feel like they probably could have pulled something off and, like, had something besides Night of the Living Dead on there. So just I get so fucking tired of that, because it's like, horror movies on? Oh, I bet it's Night of the Living Dead. Yeah.
I mean, it could be worse.
Next time, Night of the Lepus.
Yes. Lepus? Lepus?
The rabbit?
Lupus. The judicial system.
Night of the Lupus?
That's actually just kind of a sad, slow... It's a very somber rural thing.
Yes. Somber rural disease is what that is, yeah.
It's a somber rural ward.
So girl absolutely dressed like the witch from Trick or Treat shows up at the door, and...
Well, before that is Becca. Becca McKendry and her daughter show up as trick-or-treaters.
Yeah.
But then just the people going, trick-or-treat, like four times as the witch from Trick-or-Treat is standing there. I think that was when the movie broke through. I was like, okay. Your ways are not subtle, and that's fine.
Sure.
So I enjoyed the little swerve there where first you have this, like, band of killer kids who, you know, witch from Trick-or-Treat just stabs the fuck out of
them.
And then, so they're on the run from killer kids. You're like, oh, killer kids, roving bands, trick-or-treaters, just killing people for no reason. And then you get this slow reveal that these guys are just, like, part of Kid Torture Club.
Well.
And then...
It's like Hostel.
The sickness that, at the beginning, they were joking about how there were a lot of kids dressed as pirates this year. Because they've been taking kids' eyes and, like...
Yep.
Oof. So, turns out... All of the child murder is absolutely earned.
Yeah, no, it's this is one where while watching it, I got up and went to the fridge and came back and I saw this woman rapidly deleting these photos off her phone.
Yeah,
and I was like, the fuck did they try to plant like a is this? I don't, because I thought it was like costumes and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, oh, no, oh, shit, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, the swerve was totally unexpected for me, because I was like, oh, killer kids. Okay, seems a little weird. But, yeah, like, okay, these kids know what's up and are getting their brutal, bloody vengeance on these people. And it's like, that's kind of rad.
Yeah,
like, I'll take it. Like, it's not the best executed segment, but I dig it.
It's probably the darkest.
Yeah, in this one, it probably is. Yeah.
What did you think of this one, Charles?
I like this one pretty well. There's a little bit of film craft in there that's awesome. When after the guy gets stabbed at the door, and then she's gonna get the keys and go get the car. The little transition over the pool, the camera transition over the pool from house over pool to the girl running around the pool to go to where the car is. That was great. That was so good. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be done that well. It could have been just sort of like girl running, and then next scene, girl running by the car.
No, that shot was, again, that's something else I wanted to make sure we talked about, because it was gorgeous.
It was really nifty. I was like, I really appreciate that. Also, the thing with the rat poison in the mouth and then the duct tape over the mouth, very resourceful.
Yeah.
Very resourceful. That was very, that was, you know, that's making lemons out of lemonade is what that
little
is.
Frontier medicine.
Sadly, Ben wasn't there to go, squeak, squeak, squeak.
Sure, but I mean, it's like.
It's poison!
Like, this kid can either make sure you're dead or get gum out of your hair. Like, he knows what's up.
one question out of this one was when the kid with the alien mask, when the kid with the alien mask comes in and, like, comes in and the shot down the kitchen is totally from Halloween. But then, like, he stops and he turns his body and then he turns and then he puts the knife down and washes his hands. And then he picks the knife up and on to the living room he goes. And it's like, what's up with that?
OCD?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, it's a very fastidious little alien, but
I guess, but no, like, but that's the thing. It's like, if either we all missed the point or there wasn't one.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking. It was just like, just this little, I just made a note to that. I just sort of was like, why does he wash his hands?
Yeah.
I don't fucking know.
This would be the kind of notes where I just write, Matt. The fuck?
Yeah.
And then later on I go, what was I talking about? segment 4, The Weak and the Wicked.
Yes, this has got Grace Phipps in there. She's an awesome girl. She's a she's in I guess that Vampire Diaries show, but she's she's from Austin.
Excellent.
Yeah, cool girl.
So this like little team of hoodlums running amok on Halloween, playing hilarious pranks like putting a cigar out on a dude's foot.
Yeah, you have not Frieza Bulk and other extras from the Warriors.
They have decided to come out and play, eh?
Yeah. And, they're just dicks. Because just straight-up sociopaths that we learned through the course of the thing, like, from childhood, are actual straight-up sociopaths.
Yeah, I love this scene. So we have hoodlums, we have guy come out in, like, weird little costume, bleeding from the forehead, kind of dressed
from the
like
murder party school of...
Yeah. Yes, that was the first thing I thought of, too, which... I realized it was just because I saw that recently, but also that made me want to watch Murder Party again, and that made me happy because that movie is amazing.
Good job. So we learned that this guy, when he was a kid and the hoodlums were kids, they burned down his trailer and killed his parents while wearing some really neat Day of the Dead.
Yeah, makeup. Really, really pretty sweet makeup there.
So his thing was like when he spills the blood of the wicked when the wicked have harmed the weak. Is his little tagline. We find out he has summoned a demon by wearing his ridiculous costume. And said demon just kind of shows up, looks pretty gnarly, and that's it.
I thought said demon looked a little lame.
Oh, I thought he was fun.
I mean, it's fine. But and again, like with a short anthology like this, I assume there's not a ton of money put into any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay, it's probably the best you could do. But I thought it was kind of meh. And that will come up again later. But,
This one is the one that has my favorite tag in it also, the graffiti. So when they do the walk up to the guy who's come to avenge, to the avenging bit, and on the background, in the alleyway, in spray paint, it says, Doobie. I was like, that's all right, is what that is.
There was some kid who was really into the Doobie Brothers. You just don't get to see the whole tag, yeah.
Because, you know.
Darn.
Well, if you're into the Doobie Brothers, you don't use paint, you use black water. Anyway,
that's a reference I don't get.
Oh, black water. Keep on.
Oh, got it now. All right.
Okay.
Well done.
I actually wrote Schmidt. Nice Demon in here for this one.
Right on. I mean, that's like, cool.
Yeah, I like the way that it was designed. I mean, it's very much a man in suit kind of deal, but it was all right.
Segment 5, Grim Grinning Ghost.
Featuring Lin Shaye.
Hell yeah, Lin Shaye.
And is Crampton Alex in there too?
Who is Alex Esso?
From Starry Eyes.
Oh, very well.
There you go.
I didn't notice that.
There were so many people here that I go, everyone I'm looking at, I should probably recognize.
But now that you say that,
there were so many.
She's
the
lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have Lin Shaye, and then you have Lisa Marie, and you have Mix in there, and Mr. Gordon's in there. And then there's a Barbara jump.
Yeah.
Like, woo, Barbara, yay!
She's pretty excellent. And so this is a really straightforward kind of deal, where we're going to hear another legend of Halloween, and then it's going to come true, pretty much. But I think they did a really good job with the... You know that that scare is coming.
Yeah.
And you just don't know when. I think they did a great job of setting that up.
This one, to me, my thought on this was this is a scary stories to tell in the dark story on film.
It's an anti-Dodie Walker.
You can tell from the beginning that that's what it is, and holy shit was I excited to watch this play out. And it's done well.
Who's the director on this one? Because it's gorgeous.
I don't know. That's the thing. I'm looking at the Wikipedia, and I think because the movie's so new, people don't actually have listed out who did what.
But you've got all the...
This one's great, though.
You got all these shots in the thick fog. Mm-hmm. You got this weird silhouette behind her for a while.
And the creepy... Like, because, at first it's just this woman... shaped silhouette behind her, but as she gets closer and closer to her front door, and it becomes the hands that you see in silhouette largely projected on the fence.
Yeah.
And it's they add dread and stuff through these, I wouldn't say subtle because they're obviously very clearly demarcated, but like it's done well. Yeah. And it was really, really fun, and I love the fact that you get those moments of safety. You get a dog scare.
Yep.
Which might be the first one of those we've had instead of a cat.
I'll give him major props, though, for having the entirety of, like, going into the bathroom, opening the cabinet, and closing it again.
I was
not doing
for the
shit
scare.
With that mirror.
Yep, I was waiting for that.
And I wonder if now that's the thing, where, like, we're going to set it up so we're going to do this, but we're not going to do it.
It's probably tropey enough.
It's better than doing it.
Yeah, it's probably tropey enough now. But, and I'd like to hear what you guys think, too. But, of course, eventually the woman does get her, I don't know, comeuppance just as Earth's urban legend comes true.
Right.
Because she, you know, went home, heard something behind her, and she dared to look over her shoulder. And so at some point she's sitting on her couch, and there's the thing next to her.
Yeah, she just, like, leans back, revealing.
Yeah, and the one, creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
And two, it is very understated, which I thought made it all the better and much scarier.
Yeah.
Is that that's not this big, like, thing, you know, like we get in some of the other segments or just in general in movies. It is a very pale woman who has, what, like, almost just like a hair lip. It's not even a big deal.
But, yeah, just, like, moderately fucked up face.
Yeah, and just, you know, but that's the whole thing. It's just, she doesn't like to be looked at just because whatever. But it's so subtly done, and all she really does is smile a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the short's over, and I was like, fuck, that's effective.
That was good.
I really like that. So, are you guys on board with that? Or?
Yeah,
this
really
one, this one's probably one of my more favorite ones. That shot when Alex is walking down the street, like in the middle of the street, where it's like kind of foggy and the lights and stuff.
Oh, so good.
That was so well composed. That was beautiful. Well done. I also love when she's in her car. Although I got a little Josh callback in my head from Cheats with Butt. Where she's like, oh, when Lynn says, like, oh, I wish you weren't driving that shitty car. And then my head was, what about the shitty boat? Like, oh, to drive the shitty boat? I was like, ah, thanks, Josh's voice in my head. But I also love when she's in her shitty car. And the doo-wop song, don't turn around now. It's just like, oh, God bless you. Like, great. Because it's like, it's that Stephen King thing of, like, his love for music and stuff, and all the books, there's so many references and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a charm to that if done correctly, it's cool. And in this situation, I went, hee, and it's like, oh, that's no good. Like,
yeah,
it's just
no,
sort of
I,
like.
I giggled like, at that when it came up.
It was better than having the Ace of Base song, Don't Turn Around, show up.
Also, very
that
true.
Is, yeah.
That's just universally true.
That's true. Yeah.
Tennis office, elevators, mortgages, whatever.
Would have been scarier, though.
In a totally different
don't
way.
Don't turn
though.
Around. Shut up, you Swedish people.
It's like the guy who does the like little rapping in there is going to be in your back seat, and you're like, nah. Maybe like, come on, Barbie, let's go party. Like, that's not even
that's
Ace
not even,
of Base.
Yeah.
You asshole.
Dick.
That's another that water band. Another vision of love. That's the real McCoys. You don't even know what band you are. Anyway.
Segment six.
So, hey, we're halfway through this movie.
First one. Ding dong.
Can we just, as far as I'm concerned, we can go real quick through the next two, because Ding Dong is directed by Lucky McKee, and that's almost all you have to know about
it. Which one is Ding Dong?
It is the... right? It's the...
I was making a joke. I literally just... Because I don't have descriptions of these written out.
It's the couple who don't have a... They want to have a baby.
Oh, the worst one.
Yeah, and like the...
And I didn't look it up during the day, but I was like, I bet that's Lucky McKee's. Sure enough, and it's...
So wife turns into a demon when she gets angry.
Does she, or is that just him illustrating that somehow women are hateful bitches and we should all hate them?
Right, his... which is the opposite of what he's
usually but I just
doing.
Assumed it was misogyny writ large.
Right.
Because I was like, I don't think we're literally supposed to think she's turning into a demon. I think this is this guy watching, saying something that sets his wife off, you know, justified or not, and then he's going, oh, look, she turned, whenever she's mad. And I was like, I don't know that it's even literal that she turns into that.
Oh, I think it is, because I think...
It could be either one, yeah. I think. But I was like, I don't think it matters, and I think either way, fuck this.
Pretty shitty. But it's weird, like, I kept expecting Lucky McKee throughout his body of work to have that misogynistic angle pop up, but he is usually more like... Well, May is kind of people are shitty.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's funny you picked up on this with this one, because, like, for the woman, for me, it's men are shitty.
No, I know, yeah.
You know, I was surprised to see that, like, bitches, am I right? But I think it is literally supposed to be, as far as I can tell, the witch from Hansel and Gretel marries Hansel. And they grow up together. Because you get these hints, you know, like she's dressed as a witch and they talk about how, you know, she's a witch and like he says, I don't know that people like us should have children. There's all these little tiny context clues that led me to believe that like this is
literally
two characters from the fairy tale.
Not just dressed up.
It's kind of cool that like she gets the red skin and the four arms popping out occasionally, but for the most part it's way too conceptual and way too smart, stupid, and just like it's that thing that I get from him all the time, which is just like, check out how deep I am. Like, just fuck you, dude. Like, no, check it. It's really smart. Like, shut up.
What do you think, Charlie?
Stop being Lucky McKee. Yeah, this was my least favorite of the thing.
Yeah, me too. I didn't really like this one so much. I don't know that there's not necessarily a good story to be told about that. Like, kind of. With this sort of like this witch with weird maternal things going on, but I don't feel like this will be the way to do it. It's weird too to watch Pollyanna McIntosh in this because like she's the one in the woman, but more recently she was in Let Us Pray, which at some point we got to do. Very stylish and cool movie where she's a cop, and I always think about her in that one because that was at Fantastic Fest last year. I'd met her briefly. She's a real nice lady, very tall. I don't know what they're putting in the water in Scotland, but her and Karen Gillan both are just tall as hell. Although, I think Karen Gillan's Welsh, so it's whatever. Some part of Europe, they're doing something with the water, making women very tall, is my theory. Anyway, but, like, she's very kind of a composed sort of... If you've ever seen interviews with her, very chill person. And so in this one, you watch her, and she's like, blah, and, you know, kind of acting at 11, which to me... I just have to say that's probably because of the director.
I would agree.
It's just, you know, like, that is a director making an actor who's got some legit range do that kind of, the kind of witch face, you know, sort of act.
I felt like, yeah, like, she...
This is my culture. This is not a costume. No witch
that's
face.
That's what I'm saying.
No, but that was the thing. I definitely felt this was one where I kind of winced going, someone told them to be this over the top.
Yeah,
exactly.
And
right.
It bummed me out. Yeah.
Did they make up that guy to look like one of the people from those old creepy battery commercials?
Basically.
Because he looks like his face is made out of plastic and I couldn't tell what the fuck was supposed to be with him.
I was like, I don't know.
It wasn't good.
Is your face like that or did they fuck it up on purpose or what? You know, things. Yeah.
Not good.
But like, you watch Lucky McKee's Masters of Horror 1-2, and it's very similar. It's like, it's shrill, and it has this... It seems like he's trying to get at this big idea that just... Like, at the end, when he shoves him into the oven, and there's, like, this massive hell dimension in there, and it's like, just... I know that you thought this meant something, but just shut the fuck up.
And, like, I hate shitting on somebody super hardcore, but, like, this is one where, like, I feel like we've... given many chances.
It's like the ABCs of Death 1 syndrome where you're like, this is too art school, dude.
Yeah.
No good.
This means war. Next segment.
Yay.
One. The title alone made me super happy.
Right. Because realize, of course.
But yeah, Dana Gould versus the rabbit from Donnie Darko. Awesome. Like, there's a sentence I never thought I'd be able to say.
I just love this one. This was like, it was dumb and it was silly and it was Looney Tunesy, and I was like, yep, I'm. But yep. Part of the thing is I'm very biased. I fucking love Dana Gould.
As do
so
I.
So it's like, as his face shows up in something, I'm like, oh, I love your face. Mm-hmm. I love your face. So it's just like, then it became this Warner Brothers Looney Tunes thing. I'm like, okay. And then the Happy B Day, and at the end, I'm like, okay, cool.
Walk us through it, Charlie.
You have Dana in this sort of tucked role, putting out decorations for Halloween, and they're more traditional, more tame, you know, the skeletons and the kind of the spooky witch kind of stuff and that kind of thing. And then from across the street, you've got this sort of metally dude, which is a guy whose face you recognize because he's in a ton of stuff, and he's putting up his decorations, but this is much more like blood and guts and like zombies torn asunder and like all this crazy shit and like this metal music and all this stuff's going on. They're like kind of in a party and whatever else. And so then, like, as they're putting up decorations, it's like, that thing. The dueling decorators and stuff. And so, like, they're going along, and then it becomes like this thing of like, and then Dana Gould's got this thing where he has, and then trick or treating starts, and all the blasting noise and stuff, and their party. Dana Gould's inside of his house or wherever. He's got a little headset where he's got a little animatronic skeleton that he's talking to the skeleton, which gives probably my favorite moment in this, where Dana Gould comes out there and he like looks at his head turns to look at the skeleton's head, and so that makes the skeleton head turn up at him.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love that bit. It was just like, that's so sweet. So the two of them tussle, and then it's like, oh, pushy, and then boom, onto an exposed bit of wood, and then. And then they're both, and then the crowd kind of forms around them, and then it sort of stops.
So, yeah, my notes on this were Halloween decoration, dick measuring contest with Donnie Darko guy, brawl, and double impalement. Yeah,
I dug it.
So this was one of my shrugs.
I guess if it was not Dana Gould, I might not have given a shit about this.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was, I was really, really pleased by this. Huh. So that might be totally unfair. But, yeah, like this, because this is super simple and just kind of has the Tales from the Crypt, O. Henry ending of like, oh, well, and then they
both
died.
There's also a bit of a palate cleansing, at least for me anyway, which was that, like, you know, if somebody kicks you in the nuts five times and then somebody hands you a taco, you're like, well, that's a real good taco because nobody's kicking me in the nuts anymore. Instead of like with the last segment, it's sort of like,
I've always said that.
You know, and then again, this one, like, yay. So, you know.
I love you, Charlie.
That was fun.
but yeah, it's not as good as it could be, but it was. I liked it. It's fun.
Yeah. I
so Friday the 31st, probably my favorite because
this was awesome.
Bonkers. Awesome.
It makes not a goddamn bit of sense.
Well, you got a girl running from your like bargain bin, Jason.
From your similar to but legally distinct from
Jacob.
We'll call him Jacob.
running away from Slasher.
You say girl running away. I think you're mispronouncing that. The way you're supposed to pronounce that is one of the most beautifully constructed females. It's just like, and like, I think it's on purpose. I think they cast that girl to just be like, just perfect in every way. As they're like, and then they're going to put her in this, you know, in this slasher movie setup. But it's like that girl, like, initially I was like, that's got to be a joke. Because it's just like it doesn't look like bimbo slut girl or whatever else. It's just sort of like, it's like how they cast this girl that's like Cindy Crawford like. I was like, you know, and it was just sort of like, wow. And that to me, that has to be part of the joke, especially when you get to the later part when other crazy shit happens. But anyway,
well, yeah, like so slasher guy gets her, then Flying Saucer shows up.
Well, he throws the javelin at 25 yards.
Which is pretty great.
Claymation alien comes out and goes, twick-a-tweet.
Yeah.
Twick-a-tweet.
It's super fun.
Yeah. Slasher smushes alien, which then jumps
into... After checking pockets for candy and trying to point out, look,
argue.
I've got nothing.
Yeah, they argue.
Like, you get to watch...
Twick-a-tweet, twick-a-tweet. He's like, blah-blah-blah-blah. Twick-a-tweet, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah.
Twick-a-tweet.
You get to watch your mindless, mutant, deformed slasher villain go... Look, I got nothing. And, like, patting his pockets like he's a dealer at a casino to show it's not holding anything. And then finally be like, fuck it. And just stomp on the alien. And, like, that extra 30 seconds to me made all the difference to make that awesome. So, anyway.
Alien then reanimates the, like, smushed alien jumps into corpse of Ingenue, reanimates her, and then she's a fucking deadite. And it's
very much a deadite, yeah.
Deadite versus Slasher in this fantastic brawl that just... It calls back to Evil Dead 2.
For sure.
And has the single most satisfying double decapitation to end the thing. And the alien pops out and says, Twick-o-tweet again. Yep. This is my favorite.
Geysers of blood. So fantastic. And nonsense that are done on the level that of the Raimi level of hilarity.
And
or
the falling on the
Adam
running
Green.
Chainsaw in terms of blood. Falling on the running chainsaw is just... There's something really lovely about that. It's just like,
great.
Oh, that thing's still running. Oh, wow.
It is delightful. It is in no way scary. It is in a lot of ways funny.
It's so fun.
It's not my favorite, I think, but it is pretty fun. And honestly, when was the last time you saw Claymation?
Yeah.
How fucking... That was just delightful on its face for me.
Yeah, it's like calling to mind like Laser Blast and Critters, where you have the claymation aliens for a bit, and
so great. Segment 9, Ransom of Rusty Rex.
John Landis is?
Yeah, Landis is
John
like,
Landis is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Landis.
No, he's in the last one.
No, that's just this one.
No, yeah, Jonte's in the last one. Never mind. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Landis.
So Landis is the billionaire that they abduct his kid, which.
The guy from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have seen him. We've seen this kid earlier where he's trick-or-treating, and he just, like, lumbers up and, like, grabs a single Twizzler and...
Leaves.
Fucks
yes.
off.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's fantastic. And, you know, the kidnapper's like, hey, we have your son. He's like, cool, keep him.
Yep. He hangs up on them, and the guy's like, the fuck? I think that is literally the line. He goes,
yeah.
The fuck? Because who hangs up on the kidnapper? Call him back.
I don't think you heard us right. We have your kid. Like, good.
Yeah, never call us ever again.
Yeah, we don't know where he came from. He showed up at our house and he won't leave. And
5 years ago.
Yeah.
That was the...
5 years. Because he goes, and if you don't feed him, he'll eat.
Yeah.
And so basically they have to... They get stuck with this unkillable imp.
Yeah.
That is just attached to them now. And just kind of fucks with them and teases them while they try to kill it. And then they decide, fuck it, they'll throw it in like a burlap sack and chuck it in the river or whatever and, you know, just drive. And so Duder goes, stops at the gas station at some point the next day and comes back out with a sandwich. And the little imp has eaten his buddy because they haven't fed it. And he has that great moment of just taking another bite of his sandwich.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then screaming. And I was like, I'm so glad you took that extra bite of your sandwich. Somehow that to me mattered. It was so cool. So, again, very slapsticky. Mm-hmm. Kind of silly, kind of stupid. Not my favorite, but it's fine.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was kind of a funny little switcheroo sort of a thing. I did like the giggle on the creature. That kind of that tickled me. I thought that was kind of funny. Little chattery little thing, kind of gremlin-y.
Yeah,
good.
So our final segment, Bad Seed.
Good old Neil Marshall.
Yeah,
representing.
Yeah, and I think this is the girl from Skype, I believe.
Perhaps. Oh, I didn't notice that. I was too busy enjoying Ed Healy. Or Pat Healy. Yeah. Pat Healy is one of my new, like, if I see him, I know that I'm going
to
have a good time.
Yeah, me too. I trust him at this point to do anything. This also has the woman who was the shitty, jilted lesbian from one of those movies we did, playing a cop. And it's like, oh, good, she's actually a great actress and is awesome in this.
Yeah. It was the same thing that happened with Killer Mermaid, though. Yeah. Like, why do I instinctively hate you? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, and I had to be like, don't hate this woman. Out of hand.
Don't hate
it's
the
not
player.
Her fault that yeah, exactly. Hate it's not her fault she was in a terrible movie as a terrible character. But
the entirety of my notes for this are killer pumpkins, ha! With tentacles.
That's
because I think that's all you need.
Yeah. So yeah, Duder carves his masterpiece pumpkin and it's just oversized pumpkin, which then bites his goddamn head off.
Right.
And I did not see that coming, and I laughed like an idiot.
And then just skitters off on like vine tentacles
and I was just like, well, it's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
And he's pissed.
You know? And so, yeah, the pumpkin runs off, and you have the fucking police sketch artist.
Yep.
Is drawing a fucking child's drawing of a jack-o'-lantern, which, of course, our cop is just completely unimpressed with until later when they go, well, based on the bite pattern, we did a 3D print and it would look like this. And it's just a jack-o'-lantern's mouth. And it was so fucking great. It's insane.
Yeah.
This is the dumbest segment and I loved every minute of it.
Oh, that's great.
One of the things I loved, our cop is at the scene of the beheading. You know, get the call. This guy's dead. Go to the house. It's fucking crazy. And it got no head. As far as we can tell, you know, his head's bitten off by a pumpkin. She's pretty shook up. Blah, blah, blah. Chief needs to see it back at the precinct now. She goes back to the precinct. And chief goes, God damn it. Crazy shit's happening. You need to get your ass out there. And it's like, yeah. She was. She was out there. She was at a crime scene. You called her back to the precinct to tell her she needs to get out there. What the fuck is this scene about? So she heads out and watches the pumpkin terrorize a chunk of the road.
Right.
And is saved at the last moment by a Pat Healy, who we are given just enough exposition on to think he's kind of sweet on her. At which point they go to the source of said pumpkin after they blow up the shotgun, which we find out is some crazy...
Clover Corp,
some company making...
They have a very similar logo to Shamrock Corp.
Very much so, yeah. Which, again, had the rights been the kind of thing you don't have to pay for, it would have been a cool tie-in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then they just... You open up on the... I'm guessing it's the other warehouse, not the one where they keep the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
It's similarly sized.
This one is just pumpkins all the way down.
And it is, exactly, it is pumpkins all the way down. And the two of them look, oh my god, as Joe Dante looks on. And it's pretty fun. It kind of has a non-ending.
A lot of these do. A lot of these just stop.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is like, the end of this is shooting the pumpkin, because once they go see, like, look at all these pumpkins... Well, I guess if you don't carve a mouth into it, they're harmless.
Yeah, there's a,
right, you know. So, I did, I don't know if you guys did, I skipped through the credits to the end to see if there was a teaser or a coda of some kind.
Oh, I didn't. Is there?
There's not. What there is a In Memory Of for the guy who plays the little imp.
Oh.
Because apparently that guy died in 2015, so... Heck. That's a drag. And I was just like, oh, I was hoping for something silly and fun, but it, you know, okay, cool, that's nice of them to do that. So no little after credits anything, and again, you end with some a little more Adrian Barbeau doing the radio thing, which pops in every couple of segments throughout the thing. But
so we were talking about how we have our Sharktopus to Sharknado scale of like shitty movies that bring us joy.
Yeah,
I think we have, for our anthology scale, we have Poe Project of Evil is on the just completely dire and shitty side, and then
Trick or Treat. That's the testicles on the cheese grater kind of level.
Yeah. And then Trick or Treat is that gold standard where you just have to go, okay, this isn't Trick or Treat, but so few things are.
Yeah, it's the same problem we have with, like, Lights Out watching shorts. Yeah.
But on that scale, I think this is closer to the Trick or Treat side of things. I mean, like, a lot of it's really fun. A couple of things are a little too over the top. Lucky McKee's segment is just baffling and stupid. And then some of them were kind of shrugs. But I think overall, I enjoyed watching it, and I would give it like a 7 out of 10 Barry Bostwicks.
Yeah, I think...
Barry's Bostwick?
Yes.
Dessert tonight is Barry's Bostwick.
I would definitely agree with the idea that this is closer to my platonic ideal of an anthology film. Mm-hmm. I think it was just the witch segment is the only one that made me just be like, ugh, fuck this part, I hate it. But overall, I was very much entertained, I think, by the rest to some degree. A couple parts were really great. Not, you know, it's always going to be a mixed bag. But honestly, if an anthology film hits it better than 50%, that's pretty goddamn impressive. So I think I'm going to say, I'm a 7.5 out of 10, overlapping, imp appearances.
Hmm.
Overlapping imp and, what's that again?
Overlapping imp appearances.
Appearances. Yeah. Let's see. This is okay. There we go. That's, I would say, I absolutely admire their spirit and their effort. This is done with a lot of heart. This is a very sincere project for sure.
Yeah.
You can just tell up one side and down the other, this is very sincere. It's like Joe Dante's new one, Burying the X. Like, it's not like, it's like in this sense, like, it's not that good, but it's super sincere. And you're like, yep, this is a very sincere effort. But as far as this movie goes, I'd say it's better than that for sure. Overall, yeah, we've kind of hit on the same ones where Lucky's one, No Fault of Pollyanna, McIntosh's, of course, that was not particularly good. There's some great little moments in this, but yeah, it did make me yearn for Trick or Treat just because of the. In this one, even though there's some blood, gore, some splatter, and some yucky, Trick or Treat like feels fun and enjoyable, but also feels dangerous. It's like, oh, this is scary, also. You know, it's like, ee. So I would say just because of that, like, it could have gone a little more that way, but overall, cool, fun music, crazy bug nutty casting. So I want to say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Twinkle tweet.
Why didn't I think of that? God damn it, that's the best one.
And I don't care what anybody else does, I'm going to go pee a lot right now. We'll be back in a moment.
Pee me a river.
Alright, so next up we have Theater Bizarre, or El Teatro Bizarro.
It's still, you are totally don't know Spanish.
Just making shit up in the entirety.
So this one...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, this one, there's two different posters that I saw for this, and then you can go online, you'll see both of them. One's with the lady with the eyeball in the mouth, and then the other one is with this lady eating a heart. And, like, the one with the lady eating a heart is, like, is one of those examples of a poster where it's like, we're going to show you something evocative or show you some, like, very attractive lady or whatever, like the old lady's box art from VHS covers. And you watch the movie, it's completely sans hot lady eating a heart. That doesn't happen.
Yep, looking at that photo or poster now, and that's a pretty cool-looking poster. I actually like the eyeball in the mouth one better, because that was the one that intrigued me to put it in my Netflix queue back when it was on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I don't know what this is, but
yeah, that also compelling has as not shit. Fuck yeah. One to do with...
And it has nothing to do with nothing, yeah.
So the reason we picked this, just keep in mind as we're going through it, is that Richard Stanley has a short in here, and so does Tom Savini.
Yep.
So we're like, okay, yeah, we got an entry in here. And then Udo Kier is in here.
I do like Udo Kier.
It was interesting.
Putty face. He's a putty face man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Theater Bizarre, our wraparound segment. The girl with the creepiest face goes, and I know I keep harping on faces, but she, there's, and I've seen pictures of her and she looks totally normal.
Yeah.
In this movie, she looks like a normal girl got into the transport chamber and Lon Chaney from Phantom of the Opera got on the other side.
She looks oddly, yeah, like skeletal
her
or
nose is
skull-ish.
Turned up and her eyes are huge and always moist. And
I had a problem with trying to figure out if they were doing an effect there. Yeah. And clearly at the end of the movie they are. Like, they're putting makeup on her and she's, you know, she becomes less human and Udo becomes more human. Like, there's a transition happening. But the moment she walks in, I was
in
like,
her
there's something very
creepy.
Off, and I don't know why or what.
So our wraparound segment is as pointful as any wraparound segment from any anthology is.
Pointful.
Which is to say, not.
Yeah.
Which, message to all filmmakers from Horror Show Hot Dog, stop doing wraparound segments. If you've seen the VHS series, you understand, wraparound segments
are
the
terrible.
Worst.
Yeah.
Creepshow manages it because they get it like 30 seconds at a time.
Body bags, though. I like the body bags one.
Yeah, the body bags has that Tales from the Crypt thing going on.
Is that the one with John Carpenter in the morgue?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's adorable because it is very Tales from the Crypt, yeah.
If you're going for like, here's our sixth story and like, it's never a good idea.
No.
I can't think of a single example of that. That I mean, you look at like ABC's of Death 2. Did fine without one. Trick or Treat was fine without one.
Yeah, I think I would,
the
in
movie
general,
we just watched, you know, Tales of Halloween was fine without
one. Fade to black, open up on next segment. I think that's usually
instead
just
Instead, we introduce each one with these kind of like creepily made up people
sort
acting
of.
Like they're wind-up dolls.
Yeah.
Whatever. So segment one, Mother of Toads. This is our Richard Stanley joint. It stars the worst people, I think. I took to calling the guy Muppet Guy.
Huh.
Because no matter what anybody says, he sounds like...
He just keeps going, mana, mana.
Yeah. He sounds like Kermit the Frog off his meds. Where he's just like, yeah, but you know, we had to go to fucking over here. Like, okay, that's an elder sign, that's a little crafty and whatever. It's like, that is a voice that you just want to throttle. And he is our central character, which is bad. And then when his lady friend gets to acting, she can't do it either.
I wonder if that's a writing thing, though, because, like, it's one of those things where she is so one note. She's like, because, like, within 2 minutes, you're looking at these people like, why are they involved with each other romantically? Like, what is the deal? Because she's like, I want to go to the spa. I want to get my nails did. And it's just, the guy's like, I want to go look at this copy of the Necronomicon from some old bitch in the forest. Like, it's just sort of like, why are you people together? Like, it's just.
And he's still kind of like, yeah, why don't you just go get your spa treatment or whatever?
Yeah.
Get your fucking nails done.
Which, by the way. If you're in a relationship where your compromise is go get your her did, I'm gonna go look at the Book of the Undead, you know, the one written by demons that allows you to reanimate the dead. Rethink life choices, everybody. Life choices.
I know that,
that's not a conversation that should exist. Get your her did, Necronomicon.
I mean, relationship coach Paula Abdul taught it that opposites do attract, but. That will only take you
but
so far.
But that's only her and MC Scat Cat.
Yeah,
the rest
it's okay,
of us.
Like, for example, if you don't like cigarettes and he likes to smoke,
sure.
Or you take 2 steps forward and he takes 2 steps back. That, I mean, that gets awkward when
you're
trying
to get anywhere.
I mean, if
you like it quiet and they like to shout, I get that. But, like...
You're so fucking dumb.
Anyway. You know what I really love about this is when Charlie just takes the high road of silence.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. I was trying to come up with I was trying to come up with some wording in my head. Like, I can't come up with something clever. Like, damn it, brain.
The one thing in this that rules is they find, like, you know, go driving out in the middle of nowhere. They find a plinth, like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing his thing that makes me want to punch him. He's like, yeah, well, actually, this is not a gravestone. It's just
he's a real well, actually.
Yeah,
he's a mansplainer.
Hey, this is if you look up here, there's two faces. You clearly the sign of your and this is the infinity symbol, which blah blah blah. And she goes, "That's a fucking eight, Martin." And I was like, "Thank you, thank you for shouting down Muppet Guy."
Fair enough,
but
I just didn't think anything about that voice, Josh. It's like so funny.
It did not occur to me, but I'm enjoying your hatred.
It can all of his dialogue is like, "Hi ho, tonight's show's
yeah, kind of mad. The weird fish monster lady looks all right.
Yeah, so like old lady mother toads with the Necronomicon. Then, like, turns into a sexy lady.
I do like when he shows up the house. He comes in. Sit down. Here, drink this liquid. Like, what is it? Yeah, you should totally drink it, though. Like, what is it? I'm just...
It's the thing you're going to be drinking in a second, right?
Yeah. sure.
So there's, like, a bit of the old Rumpa Pumpa.
Yeah.
Ooh, and cool then, illustrations in that book, too. God damn.
The book does look really good. I do like that.
Gorgeous
yeah.
drawings. That one, the second one, especially, of the Toad Mama Lady one. That one's really good. That's really pretty.
So when I think Mother of Toads, though, I've played way too much Mario in my life.
So you're picturing
to think of that,
Toad going, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah,
as his Mario Kart gets spun around. Yeah.
Well, she has to have so many that they can each be in, like, all eight of those castles.
Yeah, and she's a blue shell using motherfucker. So he ends up banging a toad lady.
Yeah, and then gets Muppet mouthed at the end.
Yeah.
Literally, like...
Nom!
Yeah, kind of...
I thought that one was all right. Okay.
I like that one pretty well. I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, actors notwithstanding, it was kind of more, you know, a little... It got gross at parts, too.
I guess what I would say is, in this particular movie, I think that was as good as it got.
Huh.
I think.
I'll disagree with that, but we'll get there in a sec.
Segment two.
Segment two is I Love You, which my only notes are meh, boring, and predictable.
What was this one?
It's your classic, like, guy wakes up with no memory of what he's just done and is injured.
Oh my god, that was the worst.
His hand and turns out he...
And again, these are English as a second language.
Yeah.
Right? Because...
But I love you.
They're... And so, like, I sat here watching this going, I bet if they were allowed to speak whatever their native tongue is and were subtitled, they wouldn't sound like dipshits. The script is not good. Yeah. The script is not good, but they sound awful and are unable to emote or do anything because it... You can hear the concentration as they are clearly wrapping their mouths around words they are not used to saying. And it is not a good segment regardless. I mean, I don't care who you put in this. It would probably not be good. But holy fuck, is it painful to watch someone be put through this situation? Because not to be like super pretentious, but like as a performer, if I was put in that situation, someone's like, "All right, yeah, I've cast you in this thing, and you need work," I'd be like, "I'll take it, whatever it is." And they go,
"Speak Japanese.
Phonetically learn your lines in Japanese." Mm-hmm. I'd be like, "I'm going to come out of this looking like an asshole, but goddamn, if I'm going to turn a job down."
Mm-hmm.
And
this is your hip hop versus Navajo. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know what I mean. It's like, oh, cool. I guess I'm MC Wind Talker now. Oh, that's the most racist thing I've ever seen. But you know what I mean? It's like I don't even want to say these people are terrible actors. Their acting is terrible in this. But I think that is the fault of the fact that they are clearly speaking a language they're not comfortable with.
Yeah,
I would like to give them the benefit of that doubt.
It's mostly to me it was just the structure of it. So like our like Peter Stormare crossed with John Hurt dude is. Like, the upshot of it is, he has stabbed his girlfriend and...
Her new lover.
And her new lover to death, and forgot, and so now we get to see the whole thing play out again.
And it's boring.
The thing at the end where he's, like, holding her while she's, like, gurgling and bubbling...
I love you.
Pretty decent, but by the end of that shit, you know, and he just keeps going, I love you.
Yeah, the worst. This is the first time I wanted to turn this off.
All right.
Dear listeners,
that,
every now and then I take one for the team and I finish watching a movie that in any other circumstance I would not finish.
How did you feel about this segment, Trust?
Oh, the, you quit coughing first. You okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, the... The thing with this one was, I had to take a break from watching this the night when I was watching it for a different reason. Like, the reverse psychology guilt tripping really hit close to home with my first folly into being married. And I was just like, so I really had a close relationship with this woman in the short, because I was like, oh, I was married to her.
I wondered how that would play out for you, because she did remind me of your ex-wife a lot.
Yeah, think about that first part of that, Josh. Think about that first part of that, when she's doing the packing of the suitcase and then they first sit down to talk. It's like, oh, I know all those little things that are being written in this little story. Like, cause I lived them. Like, I know that stuff. And so it's like, later on in my notes, I'm realizing that they're getting kind of angrier and more scattershot. And like, I should probably give this a rest for a little while. man. So this was horror on the home front, as far as that goes. But other than that, yeah, but there's that, won't somebody help me? Kind of vibe about it. So it's sort of, can you tell I just listened to Chiefs with Butt the other day?
Yeah.
So,
it was that was in We Are Still Here, the how are you holding up?
No. That's the beginning of Killer Mermaid.
Yeah. So you won't please someone help me?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. All right, so Wet Dreams are Savini joint. For some reason this did not fill you with glee.
I hated
how
this.
How does it not fill you with glee?
I fucking
hated
it.
Oh, it's so gleeful.
This whole movie pissed me off.
Okay, well,
there was some good scenery in this one.
Yeah.
Sure.
Instead of running through the plot of this one, let's just say woman is drugging her cheating, abusive spouse into, in the Sandman comics, it's called Eternal Waking.
Yeah.
Where you keep going, and then you're still in another nightmare, And
yeah, you're balls deep in dreamland. Yeah.
Who knows what's real, and if we ever hit a real point in this? Like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
But, 3, 2, 1, and then more weird.
I will say, I do love her snipping his eyelids off.
Yep,
that's
pretty fucking baller.
So he finds out that he can switch dreams, basically, or wake himself up by closing his eyes and saying 3, 2, 1, and so snips his eyelids right off after cutting off his arms, legs, dick.
It was,
this is the one with spider crotch, which is amazing.
Is it?
I described cool. spider crotch to my wife, and she was like, I want to see that? It's like, yes, you do. So we put it on, and watching it again, so you have, full-on spider crotch, and then, in the second shot, the mandibles retract a little bit into the labia, and it's a fucking amazing. And then she cuts the dude's dick off, but, you know.
Yeah, no part of this was good.
Oh, man. That
except for the eyeball or the eye eyelid snipping. Yeah.
That makeup effect is amazing, dude. The spider crotch is pretty.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I was like, that's dumb. It looks as if we're just judging it on does that look whatever, I don't know, like acceptable as an effect. It's fine. It's great. But I just didn't care, and I thought it was kind of stupid. And then I hated every second of watching this part. So
although I did, this was one, this is what I finally came back to after pacing around for a while, but like, this is the one where like the, she takes the gag out of his mouth at the end, through the end part, and he's like, I'm going to kill you. And I wrote it down. It's like, I wonder how he's going to kill her. I'm stumped. Like, God bless you, 1230 at night brain. Like,
yeah.
It's like, because 1230 at night brain thinks that's really funny.
That guy reminded me of the guy from Where the Heart Is, weirdly enough.
There's a movie
that nobody else has seen. Neither of you are married to my wife, as far as I know. It's the one where Natalie Portman gives birth to a baby in a Walmart.
Josh.
Yeah.
We're not married to your wife yet. Don't sell yourself short.
Oh, that's true. Like, you are working your way across all the women in Minneapolis.
I'm always on the lookout for the next ex, Mrs. Malcolm. Actually, no, I have seen that movie.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, a little Stalker Channing up in there. A little, yeah.
Oh, see, I was doing Stockholm Syndrome in my head when you started saying that. Which is totally
Stalker Channing Syndrome. I don't even know what that means. You're Rizzo from Greece.
So, anyway, that happened.
Yeah, that one I enjoyed greatly, and I don't understand the hatred for it.
The next one was The Accident, right?
This is my favorite one in this film.
Really? Which I thought this was duller than dog shit.
Oh, no. It's amazing. It just doesn't fit this at all.
It does not fit in at all.
Wildly, tonally different.
I think if you watch this with zero expectation by itself,
I think I might like that segment.
Because I spent the whole time going, this is gorgeous, like visually.
It is, yeah.
This is, I love the conversation between these two people. It's amazingly natural.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman is saying every single thing that I would say to my kid if he asked those questions.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's keeping it very practical and not like, you know, when she says, like, did he do something wrong? Is that why he died? And she's like, no, honey, that's, you know, it's just a part of life. And
sure,
you don't get into any afterlife bullshit. She's not sugarcoating anything.
Like,
I really like the woman in here. But the whole time, you're just waiting for that shoe.
Yeah. She's
like, what are we going to learn? That, like, she watched the guy put the deer out of his misery, so now she's going to take somebody out of their misery and, like, where's the horror angle? And there's not one.
By the way, the thing that drove me insane was figuring out the deer.
Hmm.
I mean, did they just hit a deer with a truck?
Figuring out the deer?
Like,
well, no, I think basically the younger guy,
the deer be a deer.
Younger motorcyclist guy was the one that, like, the deer came blinging out of the forest.
No, I don't mean for the narrative. I mean, how do you get a deer to lay there and flop around without just killing a deer? Because sure. But because I just, I watched that and was like, this is good. In fact, this is good to a degree in which I don't know that you can replicate. Like, you know, there's a category of filmmaker and, you know, stuntman and whatever that have said that Westerns and, you know, movies, certain things in Hollywood have never been as good since you can no longer use tripwires when filming scenes with horses.
Right.
And I feel like the deer here might be is somewhere in that same school of thought of, like, I mean, look, if we can't break a few animals' legs, you know, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few animals' legs. Like, you just, there's no, because, like, I was, like, watching that going, this looks like a deer with its tongue lolling out,
right,
gasping for breath. I don't think you can teach a deer to do that.
Yeah. Do you think you
No, it's just, it was a beaver with a lot of range.
It's the director. Yeah.
That is the favorite thing I've ever heard on this podcast.
I don't know. Charlie's been dropping gold all night.
It was beaver with a lot of range. That's my new mantra. I'm going to start. By new mantra, I mean mantra. Because I'm going to start meditating simply so I can repeat that to myself. Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah, what are you doing?
It was a beaver with a lot of range.
Yeah, and we'll be like, how do you say that? Moose. Yes.
Pluralize, singularize, all.
Yeah, but no, that was the part that I found compelling. I didn't find the story compelling. You two talking about it is making it more compelling in retrospect.
Right. I think it is just like, I kept going, it's like, mom says all the right things, waiting for that shoe to drop. This is really amazing, but I'm not seeing the horror angle. The little girl is amazing. So, like, is the girl dead the whole time? Or is mom dead the whole time? Or is, like, did we see the biker guy go kill the deer? Does he then go kill his son? Like, is that what we're going to see next? Because it really seems like there's some menace lurking under it, but it is just this kind of poetic rumination on death.
Yeah, it is a very just kind of maudlin, navel-gazing thing. Which, again, yeah, you're right. I bet if we had watched that as a short, I might have been all about it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll go back and revisit that section.
Well, that's kind of that's why I like. I thought this one was just very. I think it takes a lot of maturity to be quiet about talking about death in a very kind of like very somber sort of way. I guess I'm using all the kind of normal descriptors, I guess, but I really like this one a lot. I just thought it was very mature and very like. Very sad. I mean, I like splattery chainsaw stuff too, but it's like this really kind of speaks to that. And also too, they don't really hit on this too heavily. And thankfully, both those actors, the female actor, the mom, and then the daughter, are both so good. Like mm-hmm. It could have gotten really kind of lame especially the mom wasn't so good. But like those sequences, whatever else, like talking about death or death as a concept, and like about innocence sort of changing and evolving and stuff. Like, that's really fascinating because there are certain people, I've heard a couple of stories from a couple of people that I've known or people I'm friends with that, like, there are certain kids and there are certain segments of the population that just are like, death? Nope. No, I don't accept it as a thing. Like, la, 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 la. Like, something happens when they're younger and they just go bloop and then that's not a thing. So I just, I don't think you can do that, tell that story satisfyingly, but I think the idea of, like, walking up to that precipice and having to address that is horrific because life and death is not exactly pleasant, and so that's neat. And so, but yeah, it has no fucking place in this movie.
That's and the way you phrase that, it's interesting because immediately in my head I went, I know people for whom you cannot talk about death.
Yeah,
because the abstract concept of say like their parents dying
mm-hmm.
will reduce them to tears. And they literally get mad if you try to, but I mean, like, if you think about it, like, I got to figure out, I had a conversation with my mom this week where it just kind of came up organically. And I was like, by the way, when you're dead and stuff, like, what am I supposed to do with you? And I probably don't phrase things well.
But, she's like, can I please order from the fast food menu first? And then we'll have this discussion.
Right? I was like, am I like, are we burying you? Or are you just like, we cremating you? Or what? Do you have a grave? I don't know. And she was like, oh, well. And then she and my dad have thought all that through, and they've paid for it, and it's all taken care of.
Yeah, that's what you have to talk about that nobody wants
to. But the thing is, I don't get why no one wants to. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, two things are true, death and taxes. And so it was like, it's interesting. But yeah, like, watching and again, like I said, I'm liking this more in retrospect, because I do know people for whom me telling them I had that conversation with my mom would upset them.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So much because they can't handle the idea of X person in their life not being there, despite the fact that because of an age range difference, it is, barring unfortunate accident, a certainty that there will be a time in their life where that person is not in their life. And again, I get that. It's not to mean that I don't care about people or that they shouldn't also care about someone, but I'm just practical enough. Yeah. And so, yeah, it is interesting when you guys put that lens on it of, okay, I've had to talk to Austin about death. Mm-hmm. He's lost some grandparents, great-grandparents, I guess. And I've had to explain death. And literally, that conversation was, well, where are we going? We're going to a funeral, buddy. Oh, what's that? Well, when someone dies, we all go to a thing, and we look at the body for some reason.
Right.
And, we all kind of talk about what they meant to us. Okay. So, great-grandpa's dead. Yeah. Will it be bloody? No. No, it won't be bloody. He'll just be... It'll look like he's sleeping. He's not sleeping, though. He's dead. That's very different.
Yeah,
because you don't want to fuck that up, right? Oh, okay. So could he be a zombie, then? No.
He's like, that's Austin.
Zombies aren't real. I mean, I know, but... I mean, could he? But no. No. when I told you zombies aren't real when you watched Zombieland, I meant it. They are not real. So, no, he won't be bloody and he won't be a zombie. He's just dead. And when we're done, we'll put him in the ground and... Well, what then? Then he'll rot.
Hmm.
Why? I wish I knew, buddy.
Yeah.
And that was that was his concept at five of what death is.
Yeah.
And it's a weird, interesting conversation to have. And so I'm liking this again more and more in retrospect because I guess I was so annoyed from what came before this, I didn't give this a chance.
Yeah.
I will say that I'd forgotten about this next segment, which I actually kind of dug.
I was going to say, I would expect you to.
Yeah, which we should get into.
I can just imagine, though, that director, where they're like, okay, Bob's going to do a segment, and then Bob, like, turns in a segment, and they're like,
fuck.
Bob, this, what the fuck are we supposed to do with this, Bob?
Yeah. Bob, did we not tell you to watch Chillerama before we did
yes.
this?
You're making all of us look like assholes here, Bob. Give you deep meditation on the human condition.
Cool, Bob fucking knows stuff and is talented. Thanks, Bob. All of our B pluses just became C minuses. Way to fuck up the curve.
So, vision stains, we've got...
Yeah.
Female serial killer who's... killing women and sucking their eyeball juice out and putting it in her eyeball so that she can see all of their memories, and then she's writing them down so that she can tell women's stories.
Insanely gross.
Yeah, really excellently done eye trauma in this one. Like, there are two things, seams in there anywhere.
No, there are two things that squick me out, and we've talked about this, I think. Eye trauma still gets to me, and Achilles trauma. Those are kind of the things that will make me cringe.
And you get both of them in this.
Yes, you do. And but the eye trauma is done so well. Yeah. They do break their own rules in this movie, because the idea is that apparently your what is it? Vitreous humor? Aqueous humor?
Yeah, one of your humors.
The goo inside your eye.
Right.
The conceit here is that she finds women, preferably older ones who have lived a good life, mm-hmm. but want to die.
Right.
And... sucks a little bit of the goo inside their eye out, and then kills them, and then injects it into her own eye, both of which are shown and are graphic and disturbing,
mm-hmm.
which allows her to then essentially watch the movie of that person's life, which she then writes down to record because she feels it's she's an artist. We see her do that, I don't know, 3-4 times.
Yeah.
And then at some point she decides, wouldn't it be fascinating to see what babies see or think or hear or feel?
Yeah, like if I go back to before there are any impressions to be had.
What's there?
Yeah. I can see beyond the beyond.
Which is where she breaks the rules, because she does not slice open someone's belly.
Right.
And suck out the, you know, vitreous humor of a prenatal embryo.
Right.
She just... shoves a needle in someone's belly, so she's just getting embryonic fluid.
Yeah, something.
And that is not the rules that we've established in this universe.
Right. I think you just have to go, like, was she meant to have, like, hit the eyeball?
Yeah, which I was like, nope.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, like this is kind of interesting. Gratuitously nude?
Yep.
There are a few points in this movie that are gratuitously nude. But yeah, so she sucks some embryonic fluid out of a woman... and then injects into herself, which causes her to kind of freak out and stab her own eyeballs out.
Crazy.
Yeah, because what did you think would happen, says herself to herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so she stabs her eyes out and then wanders around at the end of the short, tapping a cane because she's blind now, but that's better.
Yeah, she's like, sweet.
So I love the graphic violence of it.
Right.
But the story is dumb.
Oh, I like that a lot. I think this was one of the few that felt... really lived in. Like, it didn't... It just seems like I could buy that she's been doing this for a while, and her whole little world seemed really well-formed. But, yeah, I'll give you that the whole thing that it's about doesn't make any goddamn sense at all.
But I'll buy that. We always have to take on some crazy premise to watch a horror
movie. Which is great. You know, like,
I'm fine with that.
I will give you that you can see somebody's memories if you shoot up their eye goo,
mm-hmm.
because that's really harrowing.
That's a really fun idea,
And it, like, her breakdown at the end is, like, that's fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like, now at least I don't have to be shooting up eye goo anymore to
Not
feel
that she
like
ever
I have a purpose
to.
In life.
Like,
right, I bought it. I like that one quite a bit. What did you think, Charlie?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the eye trauma is a thing for sure.
That's Fulci level eye trauma.
Yeah, man. That's like especially that 3/4 when it's like come up the underside of the eye, whatever else. It's like I started getting that like that kind of like Bava and Fulci kind of like those like strings kind of in my head. It's like
here comes the splinter. Yeah.
And you're just, it's just like, oh my goodness gracious. You know, this is going to seem like a very strange observation or thought, but this is one that I think would be a good feature. Because,
really?
Yeah, because I think that with some things that'd be different, namely that, like, those journals have to go someplace. Because, like, she says, oh, it's really important. But then she's got, like, just, like, bales of them.
And yeah, they're just, like littering the floor of a squat.
She's clearly
a
crazy homeless lady,
To me, it was, like, it seemed like, okay, if you want to turn this into a full-length story, what does she do with those stories? Do they go on a blog? Do they go into things that are published? Are they, you know, whatever, something. It goes somewhere, you know?
Right.
Or there's somebody that's facilitating this because she's got some medical equipment. Maybe there's somebody that's facilitating it or whatever, or you know, this, that, and whatnot. And, like, you know, maybe she gets some memories of something. Like, you know, think about Julia's eyes. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, there's some real great suspense to be had of just not knowing necessarily in the middle part of the movie what's happening. So, like, I think you could take this and with some adjustments, make it into a feature. As it stands, there's a little bit of, like, the gross-out part for sure. You know, that's... Bleh. But I don't know that it knows what to do with all its parts, I guess I would say. Like, I thought it was quite cool, but it seems like it's just not sure what to do with it, with everything. Like, the piles of journals make no sense, you know? And, like, if you say, okay, piles of journals, we say, we accept piles of journals, okay? Well, then it's, okay, well, then that means she's crazy. She's crazy.
Right.
She's just crazy. Well, then she's crazy, but then she's also, like, really astute and able to, like, handle medical equipment and, like, stalk and kill. Like, just, like, those two things don't marry together.
The only nature of her illness
is
that she's perfectly normal. She just thinks that she can shoot up Aigu and see stuff.
Sure.
I mean,
that
can happen.
But that would make you hate the whole movie retroactively.
Well, and no, if she were just wrong about...
If she's all in her head, you wouldn't freak out?
Yeah. The freak out would be... She didn't shoot up anybody's Aigu. She's just been sitting in a corner daydreaming the whole time.
Oh, yes.
That's the freak out.
You fucking twat.
I think it's an easy differentiation to make. Did we watch stuff happen or didn't we?
Jesus. Okay, fine. I'm just, you know.
Jesus.
That's a particular scab I got to pick every now and then.
Oh, one other thing that I wanted to point out in this one, which is, like, this is a strange thing to point out in a movie where, like, kind of doing a little bit of the wolf from Looney Tunes tongue thing, a couple of the naked women. This one does have an interesting thing, which is like side pubic hair when the girl's shooting up, which is, like, it's not attractive and it's not, like, scintillating and it's not, like, enticing or whatever else. It's just sort of like...
It's not sexy at all.
No, and I really, really like that. And that was a little moment where it's like that, you know, that wasn't an accident. They see the final thing and, like, oh, oops. Like, that's not, that wasn't a oops, that was on purpose. And that, to me, like, that little tiny moment said a lot about where the capacity for what they could talk about in terms of tragedy and in terms of wasted life and in terms of documentation and stuff. And I mean, there's shit you could sit 20 minutes thinking about all that kind of stuff just for potential. So I don't know. The little stuff like that tells me that whoever this was really was on the ball in a lot of ways. And it just, I would love to see them make it again. Make it slightly different. Make a mid-length. Make another one.
Masturbate to this. You know. Make it again.
No, sorry, but when you were saying, like, it really says a lot, my brain first went, you can say a lot with pubes. And then just the, like, say it with flowers motto, like, say it with pubes.
No, I will say, Charlie, that is something that I did notice out of this one. And aside from the really horrific and well-done eye trauma, that was a moment that stuck out to me because that's just not a thing. That is a very active choice.
Well, it's like the naked woman. There's no way that was in VHS. The Incubus.
There's no way that was done accidentally. That was a choice, and it's a smart and bold one. And I dig that. I wish it was in a better thing, but this is, again, of this anthology, this is one of the two I think I kind of liked. So
yeah.
So this last one, we go from the, like, gritty, real feeling lived in thing to something that is, like, intentionally built on artifice.
I hate it so much.
Yeah, I really, really dislike this one.
Yeah. So it's just art school bullshit. You know, you got this really pathetic guy who looks like Russell Brand and Nick Frost had a kid together.
Wow.
Talking about, you know, like, being pathetic at a girl who's breaking up with
him. See, I thought he was, like, the poor man's Oliver Platt.
Or the, this Mountain is Pure Snow guy. From,
Booger?
Yeah. So imagine him with a little Nick Frost mixed in.
Jesus.
So, super pathetic guy.
By the way, to be fair, we do not mean to disparage any of the people you just referenced. All of them are awesome.
Yeah, sorry to drag you into this movie. He's really hard to watch.
He may be a good actor. He's in a shitty segment.
And the girl is only talking in cliches.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll say, in a very contrived way, where she's like, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
And that kind of shit. And then we, like, flash back to their, like, happy times together, and, like, they're feeding each other candy and desserts and shit as...
Constantly.
As near as I can tell is just, like, for a metaphor of them having sex. Like in How I Met Your Mother, when they have sandwiches instead of smoking weed.
Right.
That is like, oh, you know, I was eating her cream pie. And, you know, she's feeding each other. No, like, not that obvious, but yeah. Equally as dumb.
But so yeah,
like, she straps a mask to his face like they're doing ether together, but it just fills up with maple syrup?
Yeah, it is really, and honestly, and again, this is... And okay, so like the eye trauma in the previous segment is disturbing and graphic. This one was nauseating.
Right.
Because too much food grosses me out.
Uh-huh.
But not in like a horror way. In a way like ugh.
Yeah.
We all know what it is to have eaten too much. And
sure.
Be too full. And how uncomfortable and gross and how much you regret that. And especially for me as a guy who really doesn't like sweets.
Uh-huh.
You know, to me, like, oh, hey, you want to try this dessert? And it's like, I will take a tiny forkful and go, that is really good. Like, thank you for giving me a piece of that. Do you want a slice of pie? Nope. I've gotten a taste of it. I know what it tastes like. Very good. Nope. Anything sweet grosses me out at this point. Yeah. And so watching people just stuff their faces in this thing was harder to watch than a lot of the other things that people would assume. Like, I would rather watch zombies eating people's entrails then these people eat completely normal food at this rate because it is far grosser to me. And that, again, that's just a personal hang up and whatever. So I guess maybe you win, person who did this segment, because maybe that's what you're going for.
Yeah.
But it's the problem I have. Hey, pro wrestling. It's the problem I have with When a heel is really good in pro wrestling, their job is to make you hate them. If you make me hate you enough that I want to change the channel, are you really good at your job, or are you bad at your job?
I call that the Juno effect for you, actually.
Yes, and this is the thing, is this made me want to stop watching, because I was so grossed out. It's like, ugh, gross, ugh, this guy's an idiot, I don't care about these characters, and this is grossing me out. I want to skip to the end. And does that mean they did such a good job of playing on a certain thing and just picking that nerve? Or are they going too far and therefore it's ineffective because it is too effective? Yeah. I don't know. And that sounds kind of art school pretentious bullshit. But
so you end up...
Yeah.
Like, then girl shows up at, like, restaurant orgy club with her girlfriend. And it is, like... And boyfriend is brought out and, like, Achilles tendoned. And, like, there's a guy dressed as Frankenstein kind of in the corner that has an IV pumping, like, turkey gravy into him.
Something.
And they're all eating and talking about how, like...
Because they're all feeders, essentially, yeah. Right?
But they're feeding themselves
In
a weird way.
This, to me, is where I think their thesis statement came into play, and I went... I took two middle fingers to the sky. I was just like, no, fuck your thesis. See, I can't even talk. It makes me so mad. thesis, goddammit. Thesis statement.
Okay.
Where, like...
Charlie, earlier I said you said the best thing ever. I retract that statement and replace it with this one.
No, it's like,
so wait, what do you think the thesis is of this?
Exactly. What are they trying to say here?
I'd love to hear. Once they get to the club and you see like the guy with the IV and then some of the other stuff that's going on in the background, if you rewind it back a little bit, because I wanted to look at a couple parts more closely to see if I was onto this or not, I think this becomes a cutesy little metaphor for Hollywood and how, like, people feed themselves things that are unhealthy and they feed each other things that are unhealthy, and it's kind of meaningless. It's not really real. And it's like, fuck you. Like, fuck you and your stupid morality. Like, this is the thing, like, when writers write about writing, it's like, dude, go outside. Go somewhere else where there are things. Write about ducks. God damn it. There are ducks in the world. Go look at them and read about them.
Ducks are pretty fucking cool.
Ducks are pretty rad, like, especially the wooden ones with papers in their, paper in their butts and honeymoon. They're interesting. They're interesting ducks. Go find ducks.
Yeah, they are.
Like, but it's just like it gets old after a while. Like, it just songwriters talk about songwriting. It gets boring. And this just, to me, like, struck me as like this very thinly veiled idea about Hollywood. And I just was like, or about the film community in L.A. And I just was like, oh, fuck off. So, I mean, I might be wrong about that, but that was the vibe I got. And I was like, at that point,
For sure, there's like, they are kind of these bored, you know, ennui, pretentious dudes.
Yeah.
I kind of figured anything we see or talk about with food is a metaphor for sex.
Hmm.
So when she's saying, like, I think I'm going to stop eating for, like, a week.
Yeah, that was...
And, like, I could do it, but, you know, none of these guys would... They would all think it was weird if I did it, but I think I could just get healthier if I just, you know, abstained for a while. And so I feel like you're talking about sex anytime you're talking about food in this. But then again,
that's a good point, though.
I hesitate to try and make any sense of this, because fuck that.
Okay, so I am... Listeners, I am the least smart guy on this podcast. I want to make that very, very clear. And so I take most of the things we watch at face value. Mm-hmm. Once in a great while, I'll have a theory and then, you know, duck and cover. But, like, so I had neither Josh's sex theory nor Charlie's Hollywood theory. However, both of those seem plausible to me. And in fact, the idea that this person thought they were doing both seems plausible to me.
Oh, yeah.
And that is part of the problem with this. Is that this movie, this segment, is just, it's just dumb. It's dumb and it's bad and it's annoying. And I feel like someone is angry that I don't get it.
Uh-huh.
And someone is angrier than me that I don't get it. Because there's a difference there. You know, because I watched this and went, what the fuck? That was ridiculous. But whoever did this had an idea, right. You know, just as we all do. And as we've talked about in the past, with the idea of, like, if you don't like something, just shut up. Well, we're stuck talking about stuff that we don't like sometimes. But at the end of the day, this was the thing that they put out there.
Yeah.
And so something about this spoke to them, or they spoke to it to speak to us. I don't know. And it drove me insane to watch it.
It's that ABC's of Death.
I would like to hear what they were going for, mm-hmm. because I think something more had to be happening than just the face value that I took it as. I don't know what that is. Like I said, either your ideas seem equally plausible to me, or if someone had a third idea,
yeah,
I would believe that too.
I was just kind of like, so then maybe the supper club is an orgy club kind
of
deal. But then,
I was thinking of society while watching.
Yeah, you do have the society. Yeah. You got the starry eyes kind of deal if you're looking at the Hollywood angle. I think. It is, you can sum up how pretentious and just, like, I hate saying sophomoric because it makes you sound like the guy you're trying to right. like, beat down on. But that, like, oh my god, check out how deep we are deal.
Yeah.
Is the last shot of the thing is the goddamn Last Supper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, Jesus.
Da Vinci's Last Supper yeah. with the guy's head in the middle.
Well,
and,
I mean, I'm sorry. Who was I supposed to care
and
about
five
here?
Head lady as Jesus.
Yeah, like, that was the other problem. Wait, who?
Yeah,
who was my entry? Who am I supposed to identify with?
Yeah, and when you
there was no protagonist. Yeah, and it's
well, the one that this reminds me of is the one that hasn't come out yet that I saw in South by Southwest called Excess Flesh that I physically became angry. I hated so much. Really did not like that movie. Partly because, like, you hear a little bit of some of the director and he's got that kind of, like, you know, douchery of the master level, and it's just awful to listen to the guy talk about the movie, let alone watch the thing. But in that one, it's got the same problem. You're like, well, the obsessive and then the party girl trying to be a star girl are two leads. I hate both of them. They could both fucking get hit by a bus. Don't care. Mm-hmm. Don't care. And, like, then if you have no through line, then, like, what are we doing? It's an exercise. At that point, it's an exercise. It's like, okay, we'll get to the end of it, and it'll be an exercise. But that's a theater exercise. That's what doing a class. Like, that's not a movie.
Like, but in this, it's an exercise in masturbation, basically. If, like, who are you making this movie for? Are you making it to show how much smarter you are than everybody else? then odds are you're just jacking
off. That's just boring. And at that point, it's just boring. It's like, it's not, it just serves. And it was so interesting to have this at the end, where you kind of get to the end of this thing, and it's just like, and this is your last segment. It's just sort of like, yep, this is proof positive of why the tonality of this whole thing is all fucked. You know, I was like, oh, man. Rah, rah, rah.
Oh, and again, wraparound segment, Chiggy that's watching the show ends up being the show.
Yeah, she becomes a funny face player.
I enjoyed how Udo Kier's makeup evolved over the course of it. That was about...
It was really cool watching him do the first two wraparound segments with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
That's neat.
But it always looks creepy to have the open eyes painted on your...
Yeah, but again...
Okay, wrap it.
Yeah, fuck this movie. Don't watch it. Sorry. I was
thinking the Don't trailer from Grindhouse.
Yeah, no, this is... Honey Bunch is a nope. Don't watch this. It's not good. The two segments that we kind of talked about that I said I liked... are good, but although neither one of those was so good that I'd be like, it's even worth watching. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Tonally, this was just off for me from the start. So, yeah, this is like a 2.5 out of 10. Hey, remember the frogs at the beginning?
Yeah. I remember the frogs. Fucking frogs. You know, looking back through this, I see I'm at 50% on this. Like, I really liked... I thought Wet Dreams was really fun. The accident is gorgeous from another movie.
Yeah.
And Vision Stains is super neat. So we got our 50% rule. And one is... Then we have one that's super meh. Mother Toads is like, meh. I Love You is like, bleh. And Sweets is...
Ugh.
That's your basic Charlie Butterman raspberry for that one.
That seemed like more of a nor'easterner, but I'll let it go.
Adding all that up and dividing...
My brain made that a Charlie Butt raspberry.
So adding that all up and doing Charlie's complicated algebra, I'd have to say it's 4 out of 10 Lovecraftian vaginas.
Ooh.
Because that dialogue is actually in that... segment.
Yeah,
that made me happy.
Twice. They name drop Lovecraft twice in this movie.
Mm. Yeah, they do.
This is like, this is
all right, what'd you got there, Charles?
That's so dumb.
Number
eight. Yeah, so I would say overall, I think we've covered this much more than is necessary. So I want to say, I want to say, you know, again, I love the accent. I really liked a lot, but it just has no place in this mess. So by association, it almost gets done a little bit. So I would say 3.5 out of 10 multi-titted frog women.
Nice.
All right.
Well done.
Let's give a quick trip through Creepshow.
Yeah.
And then we'll get out of here. So, Creepshow?
Creepshow-o.
Right. El Creepshow.
Where you go, gringo?
El Programa de Espantas. El Programa de Terror? Horror Picture Show in Spanish is like El Programa de Terror.
That's pretty cool.
So, you know.
Yeah. This is a classic. You've probably seen it.
Yeah, I kind of love this movie.
It is...
When we did 2, it was like, it was so... Because I like this one better than 2.
I like 2 better.
I think I like 2 better, yeah. Although I do enjoy one of the segments in this one, I think, more than the stuff from Creepshow 2. So odds are you've seen this, and we're running very long this week, so we'll do this quickly. But first segment, Ed Harris has a 5 head, and I feel bad for him for having to dance.
Oh my god, the dance is sort of is like goodness.
That so is... the first one, I don't know, is Father's Day or whatever. I don't think they titled them. But essentially you have overbearing dad who's a dick and wants a cake on Father's Day, and eventually his daughter gets fed up with him and kills him.
And then doesn't...
Something like that. And then when people gather at the house on Father's Day where she comes in and sits at his grave and drinks a bottle of Jim Beam, his zombie comes out, kills her, kills Ed Harris and whatever.
Yeah.
Typical, Tales from the Crypt fashion. It's a pretty sweet looking zombie.
Yeah.
I will give them credit for that. That's a pretty cool zombie.
That whole "Where's my cake?" actually is pretty creepy.
I do have a note that I would have killed him too, because he is a dick.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the reason I think that I like the second one a little more is this one is more broad. Mm. All of the acting is turned up to 11, and the comic references are jacked way up. Where they like wash the entire screen in red.
Or there's blue. Literally comic book panels.
Yeah, and new panels.
And like, I honestly,
it's never a good idea.
I would agree. Like, having watched Ang Lee's Hulk, that's terrible. And this, it's a little charming to me.
Yeah, I think
it
it's
is. Cute. Except like,
I think it's okay.
Right when I'm about to be really freaked out by something is when the lights change and everything gets goofy.
Sure.
And I mean, so it undercuts the horror.
I would rather see it done in the wraparound segments, which again, in this one is pretty inoffensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mercifully brief. Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill, Stephen King as a cartoon character, basically.
And he looks like...
He is just broad as a fucking barn.
I wrote down, it looks like...
It's charming.
Once the alien stuff takes hold, I wrote down that he looks like Billy Gibbons and the Grinch had a kid.
Yeah, no, that's... Wow.
I mean, he starts out as like Hayseed Christopher Reeve.
Yes.
And then...
Yeah. And it is...
By the way, the kid at the beginning is fucking Joe Hill.
Is it really?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, holy cool. shit.
That's
back cool. when he was Joe King.
Wow. Stephen King is swinging for the fences and is clearly so full of scenery that he's chewed.
That's what actually kills him by the end of it.
My only note on this is just Stephen King turns into a plant. I just, no fucks given. It's bad.
They can't all be winners, kid.
Yeah, it is really bad.
Wait, so my favorite in this is the next one, Something to Tide You Over.
Oh, man. This was one that got me when I was a kid. This is the one that I remember.
Fuck yeah, Leslie Nielsen.
Scared the fuck out of me when I was a kid. Oh, my God.
And this one, my only note is stone cold Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, man.
Yeah, which is great.
Like, I think I alluded to this in our intro. It is so hard to see him not be the fucking Naked Gun or Police Squad. You know what I mean? Like, that is the only thing I knew him as.
Yeah.
And so the first time I saw this movie, I kept waiting for it to get silly. But, like, you know, Duder can act. Like, Leslie Nielsen's good.
Yeah.
And fuck me. Like, and also just Ted Danson in a role like this, who I only know from Cheers.
Yeah.
What the fuck? You know, and so it is my problem, not this movie's, that this subverts a lot of expectations for me. But this is a good segment. Like, it's done very well. And if I may.
Yeah.
When you put it that way.
Yeah, right, yeah.
No, my grandparents had a sliding door with curtains just like the one in the house. Where it's sort of like, so I mean, when I saw this the first time, I was like, my immediate thought was my grandparents' house. It was just like, very scary. Like, just, so this was one that stuck with me forever. And even now, I mean, I've probably watched Creepshow half a dozen times in my life. And like, even now, watching it the other afternoon, the evening, it's like they show the door and like, you see the shadow behind the door. Like, it's like, no. Gingo, it's like, I should not be tense. I know what's going to happen. But still.
I remember that makeup being more horrifying than it actually was.
Sure.
This time. Like, it looks more like wood than, like people. But it's still just great little psychological thing. And I love the final shot of like, Ted Danson, just his head underwater. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, fuck. And one of the few instances that red wash looks good.
Sure.
Good ghoul. Good and cool.
Cool. The next segment is
The Crate. Which is so fantastic.
This is the one that I have always loved most.
It is fun.
And it is the one that I found most disturbing when I first saw this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because Baboon Crate Monster, again, much like as we you'll listen after the credits tonight, folks. There are certain things that in your head are a lot scarier because you saw them at a certain age and you've built them up. This is one of those, I think, where whenever I first saw this, the nightmare I must have had at some point afterwards, that monster looked a lot scarier. Hmm. But the concept of it somehow bothers me. And it's weird because it is relatively easily defeated.
Uh-huh.
You simply just, it lives in its little box. So all I have to do is be quiet and block it.
Yeah,
and you're fine.
Don't buy the box.
But somehow this idea that there's a thing that just waits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that inevitability of doom that, like, you know, is part of what makes Romero zombies still scary. I forget who described this, but the idea that You know, you've got X, Y, and Z for things, but eventually you're going to run out of energy or sleep or whatever, and then the zombie will get you. It doesn't matter how slow they are. They'd never stop. And this is kind of that same fear, is that there's just this thing is just there. And so at some point, someone will find it or it'll get out or whatever. And that, I don't know, it's just, it's, and it's kind of freaky looking. It's just an evil looking baboon thing. And that's, like being kind of freaky.
It gets one of those, like, being a kid, you don't pick up on the fact that this is actually kind of a darkly funny story about relationships.
Yes.
You're just like, holy shit, monster.
Yep.
But there were plenty of those when I was a kid where you're just like, oh, now watching this as an adult, like Night of the Creeps is supposed to be this funny retro
so much
back,
more
like,
happening, yeah.
Scared the shit out of me. There's also, like, I had completely blocked from my mind that the creature is seen.
Oh, really?
So when they gave me a full creature shot, I was like, huh. Well, he looks kind of cool, but I had just remembered there being eyes and teeth in the dark.
And honestly,
and,
I think
like,
that's
a single arm.
That's sort of my recollection,
too. I think a
too.
Lot of people have
just
that
running
actually.
Around. He's man in suit, and he's just running around.
Well, because, I mean, again, isn't that scarier?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is the thing. If this freaks you out, less being more, you fuck yourself over, you know? But yeah, I don't know. Charlie, what do you think of this one?
I like it pretty well. I love Hal Holbrook in this. God, I love him in this.
He's really good.
And, like,
and Adrienne Barbeau just completely being unfuckable, which is amazing for her. Right?
She is.
Well, she's just like, those scenes at the party are just so wildly uncomfortable to deal with. It's just like, just shut your face. Like, ugh. But I love Hal Holbrook in this. He's really good. Also, the little scenes between him and Dexter, was it Dexter, or what's the guy's name? Dexter, whatever. Those scenes are interesting because, like, earlier on, Hal Holbrook is very, like, kind of ineffectual and very kind of meh. And then as he's sort of, like, when he's, like, wouldn't he, like, takes advantage of said situation or sees the situation for what it could possibly be, he kind of becomes a little bit more confident or whatever else, whereas, like, the other fellow is sort of, like, undone by the whole deal. And it's interesting because you see this power play and they never explain it. They never come out and describe it. They never make a big deal about it. It just happens. And it's just like, I like that a lot. Although watching this as an adult, there is one other problem. There is one other thing with this one, which is that, like, when the monkey demon baboon faced guy, like, you know, when they, Hal Holbrook flings him into the quarry, fling, bloosh, down into the water. And then it's like, then he's like, he goes to 25 Mississippis and then just goes out of the wood. I was thinking, like, well, why didn't you do that before, though, Mr. Monkey Guy? Like, it seems like...
Right, yeah.
Well, maybe, you know, he wasn't... His life wasn't in peril.
Or maybe they were messing with him. Maybe they were messing with him and they were, like, doing a game of, like, hide-and-go-seek. And they were, like, they just told him, like, go hide. And then he's like, okay. And then he goes and hides in the box. And he's like, okay, I'm going to hide. They're never going to find me.
His level of commitment is beyond that of mere mortals.
My favorite thing, though, is Hal Holbrook going, oh, you wouldn't worry about him if you had seen the way that I chained it up. But he's not getting out of there. And I was like, you literally had to wait for him to put his hands back inside the box before you dumped it.
Yeah.
But you did a really shitty job of chaining it, actually.
Once you get one, you
should, like, maybe a secondary chain.
You might have done as good a job as previous.
Yeah.
Might.
No, it was before it was nailed down. Like,
oh, good point. Yeah, no, so it is literally worse. Yeah.
He can get most of his body out of there now.
Oh,
Jesus. But yeah, that one's super fun. The last one I've never given a fuck about, and that did not change on this viewing. It's the businessman with his cockroaches. And
it's just a guy that's a big asshole and is kind of your, what's his face? You know the one.
The
guy lived in Vegas in a tower. Howard Hughes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's Howard Hughes living in a thing and being an asshole to people.
My brain just said Rapunzel? Like, no.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, sorry, my bad. But it's just, it's creepy germaphobe who's a dick getting infested with bugs.
Yeah.
And that final shot with the ton of bugs is pretty cool looking.
Yeah, the stuff coming out of his body and everything.
Yeah,
I like that shot earlier of the sink full of cockroaches. For some reason or other, like, the sink full of cockroaches, that shot really got me. It's like, blah, blah. But the rest of it's kind of
I think especially after the previous one that I like so much, this one just feels kind of toothless.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. So, yeah, you know, it ends on a bit of a weak note. And then our wraparound ends with is Tom Savini and somebody else are our garbage men who find the comic book. And they talk about how they can't order the voodoo doll because the coupon's already cut out. And when we see the boy from the beginning stabbing the voodoo doll to hurt his dad, who threw out his comic book in the first place.
Yeah, who had it coming.
Wah, wah, wah. Creepshow.
I don't know, like, I think both of the creep shows are really fun. This one is, like, is more stylized, and so that makes it a little less engaging for me. Because then the second one has the lake monster.
Yeah, oh, which fuck. Still one of my favorite short stories ever. Yeah.
And Thanks for the Ride Lady, which is also the thing that just scared the ass off of me when I was a kid. So, I don't know. I enjoy this a lot, but a lot of it is just like, Stephen King, okay. It's like, we're buddies, George, and I'm just going to do this. What? Broader? Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, whatever, you know. I'm Stephen King, it's the 80s, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. I'm coked out of my mind.
Yeah, and I have all of the money.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's fun. You should watch it. I love that in the little Wikipedia thing here, there was a Creepshow 3 that was made in the 2000s with nobody involved in the original set, and it apparently is just awful.
Hmm.
But Tom Savini says that he considers Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, to be Creepshow 3.
Oh.
Huh. Which makes a lot of sense. Yeah. He worked on both of those.
Much better in tone, yeah.
Which, that was also great.
Throw a number on it.
So I was trying to get to, and not being able to, what I rated Creepshow 2 for consistency's sake, but...
Nope, fuck it. We are capricious gods.
Yeah, give me a 7.25.
Jesus.
Out of 10 blue-faced Dansons.
Ooh.
That was Danson's first foray into makeup, went a lot better than his second.
Yeah,
he did the enough. Blackface. Yeah.
No, I got it.
To make sure the cheap seats got it.
this one's, it's not bad, it's not great, but it is certainly, it's fun. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've not seen this somehow, watch it. Like, I think this is a good one just to be, like, conversant in horror history is worth seeing. Not every segment is amazing, but you'll have a good time watching this. You won't be angry that you wasted your time. I'll say for me, it's like a 6.5 out of 10, Verrills Geordi.
Uh-huh. Some weird botany reference. Like, okay. I like this one better than 2. I like 2 quite a bit too, but I like this one a lot. Like I said, I've got that relationship one of the with the one with the Leslie Nielsen and Ted Denson. Also, the Father's Day one is just so damn creepy. And like I said, Hal Holbrook in the Crate, and I don't know. I really like this one quite a bit. So let's see. I would say 7.5. I'll say 7.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10, it's difficult to go make you a cake if you're strangling me on the ground of the graveyard.
Fair enough.
Because that always bothered me. He's like, go, why don't you go get my cake? And it's like, well, you're strangling me currently. I'm like, well. You know.
Like, I think that this movies like this need to be shown to the dipshits today who are going, the only thing that modern horror can do is just fucking call back to the classics. Because that is exactly what this is, and it was made in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's just calling back another 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, film as a thing has always been, since there was more than one movie, it's like, hey, remember that thing that you saw? Like, how many Maltese Falcons did they make? 7.
Falcons, maybe. Maltese?
Yeah, several of them. So that's just my particular, like, that review that I read of It Follows that was just like, seems like the only thing horror can do now is just call back to, you know, like, pile tropes and go, hey, remember this thing that was cool? And like, yeah, fuck you.
No, because, to be fair, every rom-com and action movie is a unique, special jewel that should be treasured and held close to your heart because none of it overlaps ever.
Right.
Fuck you, guy. So.
And on that note. Well, I think it was an F sharp. We'll be right back with our films for next week. So for next week, we did an each one pick one kind of deal. I picked Stung, which I apparently can't say. Stung. Yeah, because I kept saying Stung.
We good?
Stunga. I picked Stung, which is a 2014-15 brand new thing with giant killer wasps.
That looks fun.
Matt's pick is Basket Case, which is the 80s joint with the crazy deformed killing thing.
Fuck yeah.
In a basket, I feel.
Yep.
Charlie's got Den Buried, which is from 1981, one of our very first looks at Robert Englund, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And our short is called Alma, and what is that called? Is what?
What's it called?
Alma.
Oh, Alma. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Alma. Yep. And and it is a groovy little CGI animated kind of dark Pixar kind of deal.
Yeah.
So I think you'll enjoy that. You can find that short and our list of our films and episodes like this on our website, which is horrorshowhotdog.com. On Facebook, we are Horror Dog. We are at Horror Hot Dog on Twitter and HSHD on Reddit. Coming up very, very soon is our Horror Short Film Festival. That will be at the Twin Cities Horror Fest, tchorrorfestival.com, to see when the times are, what films are playing, and buy some tickets. We just added two films, and it's going to be fantastic.
Yep.
So, with all of that in mind, I'm just going to go ahead and say that I've been Josh this entire time, and say bye.
I'm going to delay and talk about a couple things real quick. If I can get this edited in time, you might have a chance, if you are local, to see me perform at that sweet horror sci-fi thing. It'll be happening on Tuesday, October 20th at Kieran's. Starts at 8:30. I've got to write, which I've not done yet, 5 to 8 minutes of original horror material, which I'll perform in front of a live audience. So come see that. Also, if you are local and have not yet, go check out the Soap Factory's Haunted Basement, which we will all be doing at some point here. I've done it myself. Once you have seen it, if you would like, send me an email, message on Facebook or whatever, and I will let you know what room is Chips.
Ah.
I will not give away what that is ahead of time because that ruins the fun. But now that some of my friends have started going after they're done, they've been asking me, okay, so what did you guys work on? So now I'm telling people. So if you have done it, you can talk to me. And I'll let you know what part we worked on, and we can talk about how much fun it was. And once it is closed completely and done for the season, we can talk about it on the podcast. But if you're one of those folks that has a chance to go see it because you live close enough to here or will be here, go do that, because that is awesome. And if you dig it, let them know, and let them know that you think it's cool they had Chip come in and do that, because that dude is rad. And you know, if we can help him get more work, we should.
Work.
And as far as I know, I'm Matt, and I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm trying. Hi. this is Charlie down in Austin. Take care. Have a good week. I will be traveling in one of the tubes of death up to Minneapolis on Friday morning. So I will be up there next week, so I don't know how we're going to record or how that's going to go, but that'll be really cool, and I'm looking forward to that as well. Be good. Have a good week. Well, it's fuck. I've been talking forever, so
Doobie.
Take care. We'll talk to you later. Bye bye. And then also for Goosebumps too, Josh, I would consider, if you guys have a time, I don't know when you're going to have free time in the next forever, but you I would consider taking Oliver to that, because it is a good kind of 80s style family adventure thing, you know, monstery stuff and whatever, but it's really light. It's
I've heard that like, from a lot of folks that it's a kind of fun.
Yeah, it gets that 80s vibe and that 80s feel a little bit, and like the relationship between the young girl, the teenage girl and the teenage guy, they're you know, sort of your standard setup. The way that they deal with each other, the first scene when you get those two together, you're like, oh, here we go with the, it's going to be all referential and all sarcastic and obnoxious. It's like, no, it's actually really well written. Hmm. Cool.
Huh.
And then like the relationship between the teen boy and the single mom, because dad had passed away, like their relationship is great. It's written really well. And it's not like angsty teen face. Blah. It's like this is better written, which is cool. So that makes it really good. It makes it really enjoyable. And Jack Black, they reined him in, thank God.
That's good, yeah.
So that dials that down. He's good
if you can kind of get him focused.
Yeah, for sure. So I would say for younger kids, for sure it works.
Last week I would have said yes, because Ollie has always been, like, the boy without fear. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we haven't watched a bunch of horror with him or anything, but... Right.
The because you're ultra, like, love dad.
Yeah. Like, the shit that freaked me out in Labyrinth mm-hmm. didn't faze him at all, and that kind of stuff. But we went into Spirit Halloween store this weekend. And for one thing, fucking all the kids' costumes in Spirit now are, like, kid-sized Ghostface, kid-sized yeah. Chucky, kid-sized Jason. We're like, he's fucking, what? He's no. six.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, like.
But there was a decoration in there that's a little girl kneeling with holding a teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
And when we walked in, she's just like that and kind of maybe doing like a little rocking.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, whatever, I don't think he even saw it. As we are leaving, the thing that it does gets happens, which is she lunges forward Ooh. And hangs in the air and cackles as her eyes light up. And it actually startled me, scared the fuck out of him. He started crying and yeah. Jess mm-hmm. had to like carry him out. And he's just like, I just don't like that. I don't know what it is. I don't know why they would put that in there. And
that's how that goes. Like, the shit, you know, kids will get freaked out by something. You're like, that is so much more tame than the last thing that you were not freaked out by. But it's like, if it hits your buttons, it hits your buttons.
Although I will give him that one.
No, I mean, that to me, that sounds like a totally valid thing to be scared of. Like,
yeah, well, he seemed so ashamed, you know, and we were just like, dude, that thing is designed to scare adults.
Yeah, there is no shame in being scared by something. So, like, that's
but
awesome.
Now we're going to sit and talk about it, and it's like, what do you think that was? And he's like, was it a robot? Because we did the dinosaurs at the zoo. He's like, are those real dinosaurs? And because I'm not shitty parent, I didn't say, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Said, no, they're robot dinosaurs. Look, here's one without demons. The skin on where you can actually see.
Yeah.
So he's like, I said, no, dude, it's just a machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a robot. And he's like, so the noises were just speakers in there. And the eyes were just probably like little lights connected to a battery. Like, that's my boy.
That's good, yeah.
No, coming back.
That's smart. He's like, you know,
but he has been a little,
his way out of it.
Yeah, he's been a little shakier than he used to be. I think he's just developing more imagination.
That is part of it. Is like the boy, when he was four, nothing scared him.
Yeah.
And then he got a little older, and I think you're right. Is it's you get more context, and things start to hit you on a deeper level. And he went through a period where he didn't like horrors and horror movies anymore.
Yeah.
And then he got through that, and then he's back to it, but he is now more selective about what he watches.
Mm-hmm.
Or he will watch a movie on Netflix and get a little ways in and go, this one's a little too scary, I don't want to watch this.
Okay.
You know, like, he self-selects now what he wants to watch, but it used to be he didn't give a fuck. If it was in the horror movie thing, he had watched it.
Yeah.
And now he just kind of goes, that looks interesting, and I'll watch it. And but every now and then he just goes nope, and
it's like, funny, okay, him cool. Getting the like Ollie getting the skeptic deal where he's like, yeah, you know, I know the ghosts aren't real, Papa, but that really scared me thinking that it might be a ghost. Yeah. Like, that's really cute.
That's yeah. And that's yeah.
How does Conlon handle that stuff?
Well, when he was, we had a really bad incident at Spirit like about 4 years ago or so. It was the year after we moved here. So he was in that like 7 to 8 range.
Yeah.
And he was shaking, scared. Mm. Because they had this animatronic thing with those like little like zombie baby things. Wow. And like they had this little like playground thing set up with this, like all these ones on these like, you know, teeter totters and whatever. And like, but they had so, and some of them just sort of like static little sculptures. They just sort of are like, bleh, and then they sort of sit there and they moving around on this little playground thing. Well, they had one of them, they had a couple of them that like their heads move or they make noise and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had walked by one part of it, and it's just sort of like, you know, he sees the teeter totter going up and down, whatever. And then go around the other side to their set of displays and going over that direction. And this other one, like on a swing or something, its head kind of moves back and forth. Like, da, 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 da. And he was just like, he was undone by mm-hmm. that. It was just like, he was shaking, scared. And I had to, like always in life, I never have enough time and too much shit to do. And it's like, it was like, well, no, I got to go over and get the, and I was like, and I kind of, it took in the scene for a minute. And I'm like, yeah, we got to go.
Yeah.
It was just, he was not having it. And yeah. It's weird, you know, like it's just, and now he's really getting that, he's getting the peek around the corner that I used to. which is that, like, you know, like, oh, I want to see what that is. And, like, when I was watching Creepshow, he was supposed to be doing the cat boxes, and, like, I was watching Creepshow, and he kept, like, looking over, you know, like, kind of catching parts of it and wanting to watch part of it, whatever. And, you know, so he's definitely into that range for sure now. But definitely when he was younger, goodness, there was those things that just did not
I don't know. I don't know if I've talked about this with you guys, or if it was on AON. When we took Austin trick-or-treating a few years back, there was someone who was giving out candy at their house that dressed as a zombie.
And I've heard that. I don't know if Charlie...
Yeah, and so it's just, you know, whatever random street that we're on, just going up and down, and we always went with, well, back then it was Jared, now it's Jessa, and we just went trick-or-treating, as you do. And so there's one of the houses where, you know, kids go up there, ring the doorbell, and the person kind of comes around the corner from their living room, which is 20 feet into the house, and we're standing at the edge of the sidewalk watching, and they're dressed as a zombie, and they shamble and just move really slowly towards the door, and when they get there, they give the kids candy, right? Austin lost his fucking mind.
Mm-hmm.
He was so goddamn scared, where for the next 3 years or so, when we took him trick-or-treating, he would not go on that street to trick-or-treat. We couldn't just not go to that house. He would not go on that street. And what's funny is he was over here, it's MEA weekend, so he was here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because he had no school, yeah. And I'm unemployed, and I was like, yeah, I'll hang out with Austin all day, that's awesome. And it came up, because he's like, I'm not trick-or-treating this year. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, I'm done. I'm like, I'm over it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool.
It's like, damn, yeah. Son, you got like 5 years.
And especially his size, he could probably do it till he's 15.
Right. We did it till we were 18.
Yeah, you know. But no, he's like, nah, I'm done with that. And he's like, hey, do you remember that one time we went to that house and there was the zombie? I'm like, yeah, I know, I remember that. He goes, I swear it was the scariest thing, because that guy just came flying out of the house and he kicked the door open. And in his head, it's become this thing.
Yes,
and
yes, yes.
None of that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Austin, that's not what happened. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, he grabbed me. I go, no, he didn't.
Ah.
He goes, yeah, he did. He came running down the hallway and he kicked the door open and he grabbed me. I go, no, he didn't. He came around the corner and was moving all slow like a zombie in a movie. And you were scared. You know, you're right. And, you know, that was, you came running back to me and your mom. And then you just didn't get candy from that house. And then we kind of called it a night. He goes, no, because he did. I'm like, no, he didn't. But in his head, the more times he's retold, because your memories are never your memories. Your memories are the last time you told the story.
Yeah.
And it's gotten bigger and scarier in his head over the last 4 years, where this is now like some guy went flying out of his house and like snatched him and was like going to, like, God knows what. And he's like, yeah, and I had to like scream and kick. And I'm like, no, dude, none of that happened. And he just looks at me like, you're insane. And I go, no, you are. it's you, bud. You're fucking cray. You know, and we just like that. And I had to try to explain to a 9-year-old.
Right.
Like, because you were really scared, it's gotten bigger and scarier in your head. It was really fascinating. But yeah, to this day, he still, I hate that. I hated that. That guy was mean. I'm like, no, he wasn't. He was just scared you.
Pretty great.
You know, yeah, he was doing a really cool thing that right now he would probably think is more fun than going trick or treating, which would be dressing up to give out candy. So yeah, I don't know.
But that was an interesting thing they addressed in Tales from Halloween with the, like, decoration dick measuring contest, where, like,
I like that one. So much fun. I was just like, entirely, is that Dana Gould?
Right.
Neat.
Like, I'm entirely in that dude's camp.
The Dana Gould guy?
Yeah, the skeletons and stuff, and then he's the other, you know, Donnie Darko guy's got his, like, ripped apart corpses and stuff, and I'm like, this is supposed to be where the children go and get the candy and, like, a little bit of darkness to give them, like, a pleasant scare, right? There was a house that Ollie went, when we went trick-or-treating with Ollie around Jess's school, that had, like, guys sitting in a chair in a costume.
Uh-oh.
And would, like, jump up at people, and, like, their whole yard done up as, like, a haunted house. And it was, like, a little unsettling even for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it scared the shit out of him, and I'm like, you guys are kind of assholes. Did you expect a bunch of adults to be walking around?
But, I mean, that is definitely, that is the thing. Is like, are you looking for trick-or-treaters, in which case you need to calibrate? Or are you just looking to have a party for your friends, which is what the Donnie Darko guy was doing. You didn't give a fuck about trick-or-treaters. They weren't there to hand out candy. Unfortunately, being across the street from each other makes that the conflict, which, by the way, calling it This Means War has made me laugh so hard. Yeah. I was like, oh, fucking Looney Tunes all day. But we should really shut up and do a show, by which I mean we should shut up and then stop shutting up again.
Right.